Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, I am here tonight. I have had a lot of things going on. That's the reason why I'm a little bit late tonight. I got Lorianne in here with me too. And she's on the phone too. You there?
Hello, hello. Yeah, it sounds like you got some background noise going on and doing a little shuffling. But how are you doing tonight, Robert?
Oh, I'm still working on my cars. I told you last week that they were both down. They're both still down. But the fan came in from my wife's car, so I'm going to get it hopefully fixed tomorrow. My car is still not doing anything yet, but that's okay. I found a cheaper fan for my car, so that should work. Hopefully soon I'll have it going again. But I had started out, was going to start out tonight with a, I can't find it now, with a audio file, and then I was going to read the story that goes with it. Here's the audio file.
My name is Chloe Cole, and I am a detransitioner. Another way to put that would be, I used to believe that I was born the wrong body, and the adults in my life, whom I trusted, affirmed my belief, and this caused me lifelong, irreversible harm. I speak to you today as a victim of one of the biggest medical scandals in the history of the United States of America. I speak to you in the hope that you will have the courage to bring the scandal to an end and ensure that other vulnerable teenagers, children, and young adults don't go through what I went through. At the age of 12, I began to experience what my medical team would later diagnose as gender dysphoria. I was well into an early puberty, and I was very uncomfortable with the changes that were happening to my body. I was intimidated by male attention, and when I told my parents that I felt like a boy, in retrospect, all I meant was that I hated puberty, that I wanted this newfound sexual attention to go away, that I looked up to my brothers a little bit more than I did to my sisters. I came out as transgender in a letter I sent on the dining room table. My parents were immediately concerned. They felt like they needed to get outside help from medical professionals, but this proved to be a mistake. It immediately set our entire family down a path of ideologically motivated deceit and coercion. The gender specialist I was taken to see told my parents that I needed to be put on puberty-blocking drugs right away. They asked my parents a simple question. Would you rather have a dead daughter or a living transgender son? The choice was enough for my parents to let their guard down, and in retrospect, I can't blame them. This was the moment that we all became victims of so-called gender-affirming care. I was fast-tracked onto puberty blockers and then testosterone. The resulting menopausal-like hot flashes made focusing on school impossible. I still get joint pains and weird pops in my back, but they were far worse when I was on the blockers. A month later, when I was 13, I had my first testosterone injection. It's caused permanent changes to my body. My voice will forever be deeper, my jawline sharper, my nose longer, my bone structure permanently masculinized, my Adam's apple more prominent, my fertility unknown. I look in the mirror sometimes, and I feel like a monster. I had a double mastectomy at 15. They tested my amputated breast for cancer. Now it's cancer-free, of course. I was perfectly healthy. There was nothing wrong with my still-developing body or my breasts, other than that, as an insecure teenage girl, I felt awkward about it. After my breasts were taken away from me, the tissue was incinerated. Before I was able to legally drive, I had a huge part of my future womanhood taken from me. I will never be able to breastfeed. I struggle to look at myself in the mirror at times. I still struggle to this day with sexual dysfunction. And I have massive scars across my chest, and the skin grafts that they took of my nipples are weeping fluid today, and they were grafted into a more masculine positioning, they said. After surgery, my grades in school plummeted. Everything that I went through did nothing to address my underlying mental health issues that I had. And my doctors, with their theories on gender, thought that all my problems would go away as soon as I was surgically transformed into something that vaguely resembled a boy. Their theories were wrong. The drugs and surgeries changed my body, but they did not and could not change the basic reality that I am and forever will be a female. When my specialist first told my parents that they could have a dead daughter or a live transgender son, I wasn't suicidal. I was a happy child who struggled because she was different. However, at 16, after my surgery, I did become suicidal. I'm doing better now, but my parents almost got the dead daughter promised to them by my doctors. My doctors had almost created the very nightmare they said they were trying to avoid. So what message do I want to bring to American teenagers and their families? I didn't need to be lied to. I needed compassion. I needed to be loved. I needed to be given therapy to help me work through my issues, not affirm to my delusion that by transforming into a boy, it would solve all my problems. We need to stop telling 12-year-olds that they were born wrong, that they are right to reject their own bodies and feel uncomfortable with their own skin. We need to stop telling children that puberty is an option, that they can choose what kind of puberty they will go through, just so they can choose what clothes to wear or what music to listen to. Puberty is a rite of passage to adulthood, not a disease to be mitigated. Today, I should be at home with my family celebrating my 19th birthday, and instead I'm making a desperate plea to my elected representatives. Learn the lessons from other medical scandals like the opioid crisis to recognize that doctors are human too, and sometimes they are wrong. My childhood was ruined along with thousands of detransitioners that I know through our networks. This needs to stop. You alone can stop it. Enough children have already been victimized by this barbaric pseudoscience. Please let me be your final warning. Thank you.
I had to play that. Because I found that, and it was the girl that was talking was before Congress. She had a strong backbone there. But the problem with this whole thing is will they listen to her? I sure hope so. I've got Joseph and Lorianne on the phone.
Hello. How you doing?
Hello.
What happened
last night? Hello, Joseph.
I have had so many things going on here that I just literally forgot I had a show.
Oh, Lord. I know. I said waiting for Coach to call in. I said, what the heck now? Now he's not here, you know. I said, jeez.
Yeah, my first thought was, well, maybe Lorianne came in and did the show for me. But I just literally forgot. And then after I started to remember, I thought, well, hell, I got a show going. And I looked and it was right when it should have ended, so I rescheduled it.
Yeah, that's all right. Yeah. Well, that's okay. It was a boring night last night. Boy, oh, boy. I was all geared up for Blog Talk Radio, and nothing happened. I said, what the heck am I going to do now? I had to watch TV.
Well, I was looking at...
No.
Usually on Saturday nights, Vincent does his show about 5 to 7, which kind of puts it so I really couldn't have done my show. But he did it way early today, which is, and I thought, well, heck, if he's doing it way early, then I'll just do it this evening. So here I am.
Yeah, that's all right. Well, like I said, you know, sorry, I had to watch TV a little bit. So I was going to do a show, and I said, no. Because actually, I think, wait a second, I did do something. Didn't I do a show last night, a late one or something? It was the night before. That's what the night before I did. I'll do a late, like when it gets real late at night, I won't do a talking show. I'll just do a documentary show where I'll play like something from World War II or something like that, you know. Just say like that, and then once in a while, some people will call in and talk about it, other than, you know, but when it's late at night, just to fill up the time slots, you know. Because otherwise,
yeah.
I don't use none of the time slots. You know, it's useless to me.
I need to get back to doing that more, too. For a while, you know, I used to just throw on, like, in the middle of the week, like Wednesday night, I would play, like, one of the longer documentaries or something on a certain topic or whatever. And not really to chit-chat, but mostly to just, you know, play it. And for anybody that wants to listen, yeah.
Well, for anybody who wants to know, I went to court on Monday for my case or whatever. So I went, and of course, I pretty much actually broke even. They ordered me to have another hearing, which is not what I really wanted. I really wanted to shut down the boards altogether, but, you know, that was a, you know, I wasn't going to get a judgment against them. So I got ordered to have another hearing before the hearing board itself, so which I was already told pretty much in a few words there we're going to rule in my favor. So the hearing board, which is to get my license to be a security officer to stay in North Carolina, because I was a security officer for a long time, and they kept jerking me around with my license. And then finally, as I said no, they denied me because I lacked moral turpitude. What the hell is that? You know? So basically,
yeah,
because I'm a
what
Republican.
Exactly does that mean?
Yeah, well, I'm
a
Republican.
How can you defend yourself against that? Like, what the hell do you mean by that?
Yeah, exactly. You know, what is that? So, it's because I'm a Republican, that's why, basically.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, because the board is appointed by a Democratic governor. So, obviously, you know, I'm a Republican candidate. You know, they're not going to let me in anywhere in the state. They're not giving me a license to do anything in the state when it's controlled by Democrats. That's a fact. So, so I sued them, you know, and then now, of course, I have to go back. And the judge was like, oh, yeah, you did a really good job on that paperwork. You know, it was real good. You must have had some law school practice, you know, and stuff like that, you know. And I didn't say nothing, but, you know, it's basically.
No, you just got a lot of blog talk friends that help give you advice.
yeah, that's what it is, yeah. So, hopefully, August 22nd, I think that's when I'm going to have my hearing, so hopefully I'll get that overturned, but, you know, and hopefully get back to work, you know, because right now I'm laid off, technically. I was supposed to be on leave of absence from the security company that I was working for, but they were supposed to put me on desk duty, like administrative, while I wait for the hearing. But they, of course, they didn't, you know, everything is so backwards and corrupt nowadays. You know, nobody follows through on what they're supposed to follow through with. Somebody's got some background noise. I don't know what's going on there.
It might be Joe from Montana. I think he's on there, too.
Yeah, somebody's rumbling papers or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it's me. I wanted to find out. Jesus, hey, freaking Jesus. It's about time you've been on the air, Bob. Don't you know how to fix your goddamn computer by now?
Oh, my computer. My computer's fixed. It's my cars that are messed up right now, and I was goofing around with them last night when the show sort of started, and I was outside, so that's what happened.
Your cars?
Yeah, both of them. They've got the same thing that's wrong with them. Both of them, the radiator fan went out on them.
And that affected your show, your PC?
Well, I was outside working on my car, and I just literally forgot what time it was.
Oh, okay.
Did you check the Did you check the switch to the fan? Did you check? Sometimes those switches, they have a relay, and they burn out.
Well, on my wife's car, it blew the relay, and it blew a 40-amp fuse, and we found out that the fan itself was broke, and it was causing all kinds of wobbling and everything else. So. That was causing the fan. I've got a new fan that just showed up today. So hopefully tomorrow I can start working on it.
All right, well, you're here now. By the way, hello, Lorianne. Hello there, Joe. I didn't expect anybody to show up here so early, so soon.
And Dr. Ventura is on the line, too.
Well, I'm technically kind of co-hosting, so I got an email invite from Robert to
cool.
join
all
the
right.
show tonight. I'm
so
trying to be a right
or
hand for him.
That's good, because I'm left-handed.
Probably a mix of both.
All right. Okay, and Dr. Ventura, so that's Joe's psychic. That's his religious advisor.
Yeah, that's what it's showing, that Dr. Ventura is on there, so, and he hasn't put his hand up yet, so.
Yeah. Don't unmute anyone when they don't put their hand up. So somebody complained to me about that, actually. They said, don't, you know, if they don't put their hand up, you know, then don't unmute me. Somebody sent me a message, you know. I said, all right, you know. So, I did it the other day.
Yeah, it's the right thing to do. They just want to listen. However, if you do unmute somebody, then tell them, you know, you can mute yourself And it's better that way. I've had so many people.
How do you mute yourself? How do you mute yourself?
You put yourself on mute. You touch the mute icon in your phone.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Huh.
You have a cell phone.
I never
known
that. Yeah, I'm on a cell phone right now, yeah.
Yeah, well, then you've got to mute my icon there. Test it out.
Oh, all right.
Well, yeah, everybody should have a mute icon, so just be muted when you're talking.
Yeah. So the thing is that what happens is 99% of these talk show hosts, they put you on after they make you wait about 5, 10, 15 minutes, whatever. Then they say, you know what, thanks for calling, and if you want to stick around, that's good. And even if you tell them, don't mute me, I will mute myself so that I can come back in at the right time. They go, that sounds good, and they mute you anyway. It's like, it's crazy, you know. One of these days I'm going to talk to these people. I'm going to say, hey, if you invite people over to your house and they show up at your door, are you going to tell them, hey, I'm glad you're here, wait till I finish talking to the people on the phone and then I'll come right back, or do you let them inside the house right away? Maybe they might get the fucking message. I doubt it, but maybe.
Hey, listen to this. I was just on Warren's show, Warren's Wake Up There. And boy, oh boy, let me tell you, he's doing a show on white privilege. He makes no logical sense at all and of course we got on the China conversation, and China's this great, wonderful, prosperous country that treats its people so well. And that, you know, it should be like a tourist attraction for the world, you know, for vacationers. You know, the way he makes it sound. And it's like, I just don't know where he gets his facts from. And wasn't he supposed to be going to China? Didn't he say that's where he was going?
I don't know, but I know he's had the show on all damn day. He's had a show on in the afternoon. He has. And then he had another show on in the early evening. And I went to both of them because I wanted to find out what his perspectives were. He never puts me through. I don't know if he knows my number or not. He just never has put me on the show.
Huh.
Well, one of the things that happened tonight was we had a speaker at our church tonight, which was actually rather cool because he was from Nigeria.
Yeah.
And he talked about how all these people who talk about Black Lives Matter being for the Black Lives are lying to you.
So he's absolutely right. If you burn down $2 billion worth of damage, right, and you've been around, they weren't around last summer. They were around the summer before last. And they went from place to place to place to place. And even though people are saying, well, they're 98% peaceful, who cares? It's the 2% that are burning down people's neighborhoods. That's what you got to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you guys something. If you had an organization that you wanted to become popular, you wanted to become approved, and every time you went someplace, let's say the first 3 or 4 times, somebody, even if they were infiltrators, they burned down the buildings, wouldn't you take it upon yourself to hire security to make sure it would never happen again?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Did they do it? Fuck no. So they are responsible for the burning down of the buildings along with Antifa. And I don't care if it is whiteface. They're responsible for it.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I'm trying to find that guy's name right now because he spoke tonight, and it was just really a great what he talked about was great, but he said that most everybody who pushes this Black Lives Matter thing, he says it's all a lie. He says the people who started it lied to everybody about what was going on. And
George Soros.
George Soros, yeah. And I thought it was a great.
If it's Soros funded, and if they're Marxist, if they have Marxist leanings, And if one of the founders of the Black Lives Matter moved into a $1.8 million house in a white neighborhood, what does that tell you?
Yeah, it means they want to be where the whites are, I guess. I don't know. Or
well,
they want to take over the neighborhood.
She certainly does.
Yeah.
And it's all bullshit. It's all propaganda, as you were going to allude to, Bob. It's all bullshit in order to get people divided. Black against white, whites against blacks, and then the New World Order just marches on in the middle.
Yeah. That's for sure.
So how are you doing, Bob? I mean, you got your eye. Is that recuperating?
Actually, it is. Weird part about it is when they replace that lens, I can see the edge of the lens in there. If I look to the right or to the left, I can see the edge of that lens, which is really strange.
Yeah, you shouldn't be able to see it. You shouldn't have to see that. You should see as naturally as possible.
Yeah, and if I look to the right, everything is fine. It's still out of focus, but what happened was I had a bulge in my retina, and they said once they got everything fixed the way they needed to, that bulge should start going down, and once it gets back to normal, then my eyesight will be fine. But there's still a bulge in there, so if I like look at a straight line and run my eye across it, you know, just looking at one spot and move across, I can see where that bulge is because that straight line has a dip in it.
Yeah,
so it,
and you told me about
that
bulge 2 weeks ago, too. So, I mean, it should have been, the swelling should have gone down a little bit by now.
It's gone down actually quite a bit, but it's still there. I can still see the dip in there, but it's not nearly as much as it was. And they said it'd probably be 6 months before that fully gets to where it should be. So hopefully everything will turn out the way I need it to.
Well, yeah, hopefully, yeah. I mean, that's a very delicate surgery, cataracts, retinas, corneas, et cetera. You got to slice the eyeball.
Yeah.
You got to put it back together, I think, with literal stitches. Or are they using glue to do that?
Not to interrupt you there. Is Dr. Ventura still on the line over there? You see his number still there?
Yeah, he's still there.
Okay. Well, he can hear then. All right, because I got to call him real quick privately. So I'm going to step out for a minute, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, I've so it's been kind of an interesting thing with the eye surgery and everything. Because I went into it thinking, wow, this is going to be great. I'm going to walk out of there and see everything. And I couldn't see a thing. It was really kind of strange. But they had that patch over my eye for about a week or two. And then once they took the patch off, I was thinking, oh, boy, I'm going to be able to see. No, everything was fuzzy.
How fuzzy is it now compared to the way it was?
It's actually a lot better now. One of the things I do is I stand on my balcony and look down at my car, and my license plates are turquoise and yellow with the yellow letters in it. And until just about a week and a half ago, I couldn't even see that yellow. Now it's starting to show up, so I know things are getting better.
All right, that's good. Good.
I still can't read it, but out of that.
But progress is progress. It's better to have some sort of progress than to have no progress at all.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
All right, so what did you want to, anything you wanted to talk about specifically today?
Well, I started out with that thing about that detransitioner who talked to Congress and said that enough children have already been victimized by this barbaric pseudoscience of telling children that if they're confused during puberty, they are in the wrong body. Well, to me, confusion is part of the growing up process, you know, and this girl actually said it right, that puberty is a rite of passage into adulthood, not a disease. And I thought that was an excellent point. And she was talking to Congress, but she told him that my childhood was ruined. This needs to stop. You alone can stop it. Enough children have already been victimized by this barbaric pseudoscience. Please let me be your final warning. And she's 12 years old.
I know this. I read a few weeks ago.
19, actually, she's 19 now, but this whole thing started when she was 12.
When she was 12, huh?
Yeah.
All right.
And she says now at 19, she should be enjoying her life, but she's still having problems with everything that they did to her. Her voice is lower, and she's got an Adam's apple now, and because of the testosterone things that they've given her. And
so she transitioned over from a biological female to an artificial man.
Yeah, and she says it's been hell. She wishes she'd never done it, and she blames Congress for not doing anything. She blames the doctors for doing this to the children when it's a normal rite of passage to adulthood.
It's elective surgery. The doctors are responsible to a huge degree. They should all say no. But we all know doctors don't have spines nowadays. Well, in one instance, I can understand, because when the pandemic came out, they were threatened by the Biden administration that if they told their patients that they could use hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin or use any kind of therapeutics, that their license would be, they didn't say their license would be suspended. They were told the license would come under review, which was code for if you prevent people from wearing a mask and from getting the vaccine, no, not from preventing from wearing a mask, but if you prevent them from getting the vaccine, then you're no longer going to be a doctor. So in a way, I kind of understand the very, very, very much of a reluctance coming from the groups of doctors who have spent, 16 years becoming a doctor.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to spend 16 years of your life getting a license and then have it snuffed out in a matter of weeks. So I can understand, but this thing about the poor kids who elect to become either artificial boys or artificial girls, they should say no to that. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, this girl that audio that I did said that at 12, her parents sought the help of experts. And she said, well, this proved to be a mistake. It immediately set our entire family down a path of ideologically motivated deceit and coercion. The gender specialist that I was taken to told my parents that I needed to be put on puberty blocking drugs right away. Then he told her parents that if she didn't do this, that she would commit suicide. And she said suicide had never crossed her mind. But it has since.
Believe it. Yeah. Even if it did, it's still the parents' responsibility to take care of that particular motivation if it was real.
Mm-hmm.
But for parents to even entertain the thought of perhaps letting their child become a different gender, that shows the stupidity, yet the horrific power of propaganda and brainwashing to have your parents do that to your kids. You know, Charlize Theron, the actress, and there's another actress, and a woman who suing her ex-husband for sole custody of her child because she wants the child, the boy, to transition into a girl. The boy doesn't want it. It's not like he became propagandized. He doesn't want to be transitioned. But the woman, the ex-wife, wants him to. What is going on with American society?
Well, I'm not exactly sure, but it's like they keep telling these kids, well, you were born in the wrong body. We can make you what you are not. And this girl came out and she says, she actually said this in front of Congress. She says their theories were wrong. The drugs and surgeries changed my body, but they did not and could not change the basic reality of that I am and forever will be a female. And I just applauded that girl for that. You know, that was just an awesome thing for her to say. That had to take some guts.
Well, yeah, but I'm sure she's speaking out of frustration too. It's got to be a harder transition to go from girl to boy than to go from boy to girl. All you have to do to go from boy to girl is just take some hormones. You got breasts. You can wear a dress. You can put on makeup, and you don't really need to have a post-op. But when you're a boy, I mean a girl going to a boy, you know, you're not going to get a penis. And you have to undergo breast surgery?
You got that a little wrong. It is not easy either way. A girl transitioning to a boy, she can have a fake penis made, and that is a very, very brutal thing that they do. They'll try to take as much of the skin and stuff to make it with from that area, but most of the time they have to take a big chunk of skin out of the top of their forearm and use that to try to make a fake penis out of. And it's very brutal, and it's not going to be a fully functioning one, so a lot of times they have to put an implant, penis pump, and that kind of thing. It's a very, very brutal thing, and so it's not an easy transition at all for a woman to go to a man, and then also vice versa, a boy that wants to transition into a girl that gets those kinds of surgeries, when they make a fake vagina, it's also pretty gross because in the making of it, sometimes they'll use some tissue from the anus. So it might be stinky, or if they use tissues from other areas of the body, then the vagina will still grow hair. And the fake vagina, in order to keep it open, to keep it from closing shut, they have to put a dildo in it multiple times a day. And so for children, you know, for people that are young doing this, you know how responsible they are. I remember watching a video about a mother that, you know, was pretty much forcing her, you know, like, lay the hell down if you're not going to do what I'm going to do it for you, to keep the fake vagina, you know, open. And, you know, if that could be considered parental rape, by doing so. And so, I mean, these things are the surgeries either way are absolutely brutal and disgusting. And especially to have children go through this, minors go through this without fully understanding what they're signing up for, I think is absolutely disgusting. I think it's malpractice on the part of doctors. I think it's unconstitutional for a state to have laws that will allow children to get this done without parental consent even over a certain age. Like I think here in Oregon, the law just passed that you can get these surgeries done as young as 15 without parental consent, but they can start doing hormone transitioning at any age. Without parental consent. So, I mean, this is where we're at. This is absolutely sickening and wrong in every way. But yet it's also the next big money maker as well. Because, I mean, imagine if you're a plastic surgeon or whatever, and you're the one that gets the lucrative deal to have continuous, you know, surgeries to, you know, help reduce the scarring or, you know, maintenance surgeries or whatever, you know, you're looking at a long-term profit on that person. So that's why they're pushing.
Well, you know, one of the things that's that's going on. One of the problems I see is like New Orleans Wake Up in the chat room says that why are you guys fixated on this trans stuff? I don't agree with it, but I'm not going to make them a scapegoat. And he says, shaking my head, listening to Lori Ann, it's sad to keep focusing on this. And I said, no, it's not, because the government is actually making new laws to make all of this lawful. And if we don't say something about it, if we don't keep talking about it and keep saying this is wrong, who knows how far they'll go?
Oh, they'll go pretty far.
Oh, they'll go as far as they can.
Of course. They'll make it against the law for parents to even intervene.
They're already doing that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. So if it's being done in one state or two states, you know it's going to spread out as far as possible throughout the rest of the states. So, yeah, it's meant to divide, confuse, and to find out who are the sheep. When you have parents who will not only allow their children because they don't know how to apply discipline to their kids and tell them, no, Johnny, no, Susie, you're not going to get a new body, no. In addition to that, they're going to start pushing their kids to get it? What kind of parents are these?
Well, yeah, they guilt them into it. You know, these doctors will be like, you know, well, do you want a kid that commits suicide dead, or do you want, you know, a boy, or do you want a kid that's still alive but a different sex? You know, that's how they'll put it to them.
Well,
they guilt them and manipulate them into it.
Okay. I think Sarge is even there tonight. Hi. Yeah. Is that you, Sarge?
Hey, fellas. It sure is. And, boy, you know, I don't think
Sarge.
Yeah, how you doing there, Joe from Montana, Lori and Robert? But look,
hey,
guys,
Sarge.
In addition to the subject of this sex trafficking slavery on the southern border, you cannot speak enough about this degenerate perversion of transgenderism. And to give you an example of the concreteness of it, I'd like you to hear this rather short passage from Irreversible Damage, The Transgender Craze Seducing Our Daughters by Abigail Schreier. This is what she writes about phalloplasty, which is what we're discussing here about the, quote, transformation, unquote, of a perfectly, normally, biologically healthy woman or girl into a boy or a man, allegedly. This is what she describes it as. Phalloplasty is not for the faint of heart. To produce a penis shaft and urethra, a surgeon must take a skin flap from the body, most often by de-sleeving the forearm, peeling off the skin, fat, nerves, and blood vessels. The surgeon must then connect nerves to restore sensation to the graft site. Getting a penis-like flap of skin successfully grafted is no simple task. Creating the function of urination, much less stiffening, is a challenge, enabling it to harden enough to penetrate yet another. A subsequent surgery is necessary to insert implants into the grafted phallus to produce an erection-like effect. Even just connecting all the veins and arteries to allow blood flow to the new appendage demands microsurgical skill that would abash a master watchmaker. So much delicate piercing of miniature parts. The radial artery that supplies blood to the neophallus must be connected to the artery in the groin area under a microscope, using sutures about one-fourth the thickness of a human hair. The same suturing must be done to veins alongside the radial artery to direct blood flow into the groin. Blood clots are common, since even trivial injuries to the lining of the vessels will cause platelets to stick. A clot can cause the graft to fail, creating an open wound that, because of inflammation, cannot be sutured closed. The newly fashioned urethra comes with its own risks, leaks internally into the outside world. An internal leak can produce scar tissues and strictures, resulting in urine that will not stream but fans out in the spray. And then there's the donor site of the forearm, sometimes left frightfully disfigured by de-sleeving. One female or male trans adult told me about a 19-year-old friend with phalloplasty resulting in gangrene and loss of the friend is dispossessed of normal genitalia for either sex and tethered to a catheter that empties into a urine bag strapped to a leg. But there's one thing that's even worse. Listen what happened to this one person named Blake. Blake's attempted phalloplasty was a disaster. The implanted urethra developed strictures, which required additional surgery to insert a suprapubic catheter to divert the urinary stream so that the wound would heal. The suprapubic tube developed sepsis, a blood clot, a common risk of phalloplasty, but led to pulmonary embolism from which he nearly died. A team of doctors saved his life, but he was left with wrenching pain. His forearm mangled by de-sleeving, he could no longer lift objects with the arm with any great effect. And even a breeze was enough to send painful shocks through his arm. My arm is handicapped for life, he told me. I can't hold things. I can't hold a fork. Sepsis bloomed in his urethra. It turned out the skin flap taken from the arm was sprouting hair inside of him. Just imagine an ingrown hair in your beard or on your leg and multiply that by 1,000. His urethra failed. He had to sit down to urinate. I have a big mound of nothing, and it's stuff that's even worse than that. And they wanted even the possibility of this sort of thing on children not even able to sign a contract. This is demonic. This is evil, and this needs to be talked about every opportunity we can to stop. If this is going to be done, it should only be done with people who have reached the legal age of consent and the ability to legally make a contract and no one else.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I totally agree with you, Sarge.
There are people out there who lively wave it off as though this is just a big cultural storm, just meaningless Sturm und Drang. It has no effect. It has no meaning. Why are you excited about it? Who cares about what somebody else does? They're the same people, by the way, who don't want us to own a gas stove. I mean, I've had it with them, and I say we need to confront them every time they bring these sorts of things up. Put it in their face and tell them the concrete results, the actual results and damage to human beings, to the policies that they are advocating.
Yep. You know, and that's one of the things that I was talking about, that girl that talked before Congress. She talked about how when they started transitioning her body, they cut off her breasts, and then they checked them to see if there was any disease in them. She said they were healthy, and then they burned them. And she said now she's got scars across, huge scars across her chest. She says and it seeps liquid all the time because it keeps getting infected. Well, you know, this happened when she was 13. Now she's 19. She's going to have that problem for the rest of her life because of the doctors.
Well, this is something, look, we have never before in my lifetime or any time in history that I can imagine, was actually created to attempt a class of people who are literally mentally ill. Now, I understand there are ranges of mental illness. Some people have mental illness, and they're completely functional. You know, normal amounts of depression or normal amounts of mania or normal amounts of whatever you can imagine. They're still perfectly functional. And that would include people who are transgender, probably maybe even most of them. But again, since it is a spectrum of mental illness, there are those who are on the extreme end of the mental illness who are actually dysfunctionally mental ill and need confinement. And we're going to say that now we need to encourage this as a literally an ethnic class, and to minimize it or treat it is tantamount to genocide. That is what they are arguing now, folks, that to stop this sort of thing through treatment, psychiatric treatment, is akin to genocide, because transgenders are in actuality an ethnic class.
Yep.
It's madness. We're living in a time about now madness. There's no two ways about it, and we better start calling it what it is.
Yeah, and then we have people like that Richard Levine in our government, who is now supposedly a woman. She says, he says, adolescence is hard and puberty is hard. What if you're going through the wrong puberty? Oh, my God.
Think of it, man. I mean, I thought part of the Hippocratic Oath was to do no harm. How can you take a biologically normal person with perfectly functioning normal sexual organs and then mutilate them? How can you possibly not be doing harm by this? I mean, it is literally a complete negation and violation of the Hippocratic Oath itself. You do not mutilate healthy organs in the name of helping your patient. You just don't do it. I'd like to know, since when has this become part of the medical canon?
They're not doing it in the name of the Hippocratic Oath. They're doing it in the name of the almighty greenback. Doctors are just
and ideology. Both are true.
If it's ideology that does show the propaganda is affecting them, I believe that. You know, it's just plain corruption.
Well, we've got some of these hospital administrators admitting that this is a new field of medicine into which they can earn millions of dollars. They are literally in Zoom calls saying this to their colleagues. We have them on tape. We have their emails. We have them thinking of exploring this brave new frontier of elective surgical medicine. They are boasting about the opportunities and the money it can bring in. So there's elements of both.
Well, there you go.
There's ideology, and then there's foul money. Both are
That's
at work.
It. That's it. And they will
exactly.
they will claim
and
ideology
and,
as being their primary motivation. But it's not. It's going to be the greenback.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we know what it is.
And going back to the Oregon law that was allowing this stuff, you know, like half of this law, I mean, it's pages long, half of it is very descriptive, releasing the physician, the clinic that the person goes to, and the health insurance companies for any liability for doing these transition surgeries on children.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all protected legally, you know, that took up more than half of the bill itself. Is just giving them all these legal protections against being sued.
Yeah. I don't know how anybody can have a problem with Dr. Joseph Mengele after these sorts of Frankenstein-like experiments. I'm not kidding. I mean, I really do not see how anyone, Dr. Mengele didn't do anything this crazy. He just tried to make people have blue eyes and did experiments on twins. He didn't do anything this mad.
Well, he didn't have the chance.
Lord have mercy.
I mean, look.
They've got that whole thing going on in Mexico, too.
Oh, man. The angel of death. You got nothing on him.
Nothing on him. I am not kidding.
Oh, you're right. It's sad. It's so sad. It's pathetically funny.
Yeah, and they've even got the same kind of thing happening here in New Mexico. But, you know, the governor that we've got, she absolutely was gleeful and joyful that she had passed a bill on abortion. And this going back into another subject here that's kind of a bugaboo of mine is abortion. She has passed a bill here in New Mexico that says abortion can be done all the way up until the day of birth, and even after if it comes down to it.
Well, then she's a moderate, then. She's a moderate because there were people months ago, last year, maybe even in 2021, who were clamoring for, what do they call it, post-viability abortion, you know, post-birth abortion.
I'll see you that and go one further. There was one doctor saying that parents should have a 30-month period to consider whether or not they want their newborn, even a healthy one, to even live. He was proposing that as a possibility. Now, obviously, at this stage where we are in 2023, it went over pretty much like a lead balloon. But look, who would have thought we've had the era of transgenderism that we're experiencing now just 5 years ago? So please, don't say anything's off the table with these insane lunatic, degenerate, Marxist lunatics. They'll do anything if they can get away with it.
They absolutely will. And the problem comes in is that we have allowed them to get away with too much already, and they think they can do anything they damn well please now.
Yeah, they're gods. They think they're gods. I really believe they have the biggest case of megalomania that is probably there. They literally think they can transform human beings into another sex like God. Like, they think they can change the weather, too. They actually think they can blot out the sun and stop global warming. These people have got the worst case of megalomania probably ever seen since, I don't know, Nero. I mean, these people have really got it bad. And they're everywhere in academia. They're everywhere in politics. They're everywhere.
I've been saying that for a long time, that the major motivation for people, tin pot dictators and even, you know, even real dictators and even Republicans, even those people who are heading up a republic, is to become a god. You mentioned Nero. I've always mentioned Nero, Caesar, Caligula, Stalin and Hitler, because what else is there left? If once you've conquered your country and then you conquered another country, what else is left? To go to another party and sip champagne and pouring.
You got the life of millions in your hands. You know, it's boring after a while. You have to at least you could aspire to demigod status, not outright full out God, you know. But something beyond the mere purview of ordinary humanity.
And that is to become godlike. That's what transhumanism is all about. Of course, they're trying to make us believe that it's there for us, that we can transfer our consciousness into the body of an android and thereby escape pain and perhaps even death. But it's not for us. It's only for them. They're only making sure that the universities and the DARPA and the other countries around the world will be experimenting on transhumanism in order to be successful with it. And then the 13 bloodlines will just swoop on in and claim it for themselves. And that will be the time when the full bore operation of depopulation will take place, in my opinion.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I right now have New Orleans Wake Up says he's got a bone to pick with me, and he says, you show another person to use your CNN as a platform to promote Ron DeSantis' claim that teaches that black people benefited from slavery. It's a shame for you to allow that. I don't think any one of us has said anything about DeSantis tonight, have we?
Well, if you haven't, Robert, I'm happy to say something about it. I'll take up your slack, okay?
No,
let me do it. Let me take the heat.
Go for it.
Let me take the heat, Robert. I mean, whatever if and when you will allow me to, I'll be more than happy to do it. Because I don't need any prompting to expose the lies of these people, and they are lying about the Florida curriculum. I mean, literally lying about it. I saw one of the authors of the curriculum, a scholarly black gentleman named William Allen. He wrote the curriculum, and he explained in great detail why everything Kamala Harris says is an outright lie or a demagogic distortion. It was masterful the way he did it, and it literally is true. Because these people don't want any context to history. They want to channel you down a rigid way of thinking about the particular aspect of history that they wish to present to you that conforms with their agenda. You cannot deviate from it. These are people who love talking about that we're not nuanced. You know, conservative, you're not nuanced. Don't you understand that nuance is about? But slavery, there can't be no nuance in slavery. Oh, no. It's got to be a Simon Legree or worse recitation of slavery. Nothing else is allowed. These people, I'm telling you, they are the ultimate thought police. And this is one of the reasons why this is getting such pushback from the left. What's going on in Florida?
Yep. What he was talking about was what Vince was talked about on Vince's show today, and you were there.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I could let you hear Mr. Allen himself in his own words explain eloquently what he meant by this when he authored this in the curriculum. And everybody knows it's solid scholarship. It conforms with everything I've been reading about decades of resilient black people, both in slavery and once they were freed from slavery, using skills they had acquired while they were slaves that redounded to their benefit both when they were enslaved and when they got free from slavery. No one in that curriculum is saying slavery was good for black people. But while that is true, it is also true that they got skills while they were enslaved that served to their benefit when they were no longer slaves. Both mm-hmm. are true. And these people are the ones that claim our minds aren't flexible enough to hold two apparently contradictory thoughts in our heads at the same time. Yet still, they insist on us traveling down the rigidly outlined parameters, and dare you not step outside it, or we will cancel you.
Yep. And that's exactly what's going on there. They're trying to cancel everyone who doesn't agree with them.
Exactly the way they say you got to agree with them. The only thing you're allowed to say is every slave was treated like Simon Legree or worse did in Uncle Tom's Cabin. That's the only thing they will allow you to say about slavery. Nothing else. Now, I was tired for the longest time of the Gone with the Wind portrayal of slaves, too. So I get that. I mean, that's nonsense, too. But this, you know, slaves got whipped every day of their lives, and they didn't see anything else but misery, whipping, and slavery is equally a lie. It's like these same people will love to tell you about how slavery was varied in Africa. Well, it often resulted where they were actually sort of a patrilineal slaves in which they were actually adopted in the family. Even though they were slaves, they were treated just like members of the family. And they would love to say this was like the picture of slavery in sub-Saharan Africa. When in truth, yes, there were systems like that. At the other extreme, slaves were sacrificed as human sacrifices who were taken as prisoners of war and tribal warfare and empire warfare. Both extremes are true, and extremes are true in slavery within the United States. You had a mixture of all of it. But no, that's only nuance you can see is possible nuances in sub-Saharan African-style slavery. In American slavery, there's only one method of slavery, and that was the whip and the lash every single day. The slave collar, the whip, the lash, and the branding iron. There was nothing else that happened to slaves in slavery other than that. They didn't learn anything of values in themselves. Nothing. They don't know how to read. They don't know how to write. You know, I mean, I'm reading the autobiography of Malcolm X. And Malcolm X literally says while he was enslaved, remember, one of the common complaints is that the 13th Amendment allows states to enslave you if you've been duly convicted of a crime. Isn't that one of the things we've been hearing from all over the place? How horrible it is that slavery still exists when you have been duly convicted of a crime, like it says in the 13th Amendment. Well, Malcolm X was enslaved when he got caught burglarizing wealthy white families. And he got sent to Massachusetts penal correction system. And while he was enslaved in prison, he learned how to read. And he wrote in there. He was truly free for the first time in his life during months of incarceration as he sat there absorbing all his knowledge from this autodidactic prisoner named Robert Embry, a self-taught man who taught him much things that led to his racial awakening. This is what Malcolm X said of his enslavement. Because I cannot think of a more valuable skill one can attain other than to be able to read in a modern-day civilizational cultural context. If you know of a more important skill than being able to read and understand things, I don't think that you're going to come up with too many. And Malcolm X says he learned to really read in prison, enslaved. And I don't have to make it up. I can give you the quote from the autobiography of Malcolm X, which I got right here in front of me. Hmm. I mean, like I said, these people, listening to these people and their distortions and their bullying, their intellectual bullying may be the worst of it. The way that they love to intellectually bully you and make you feel like, you know, you don't know what you're listening to your betters tell you about things that you don't know about and you should listen to them because they're going to edumacate you. And that's what irritates most of us. Their internal narcissism and well, like I said, you know, look, what we need to do is tell people what we know, and we need to push back on these people every time they try to do little tricks. They try to do little tricks, push back on them. No, this isn't so because I know that. This is on historical record. This is not jive with what you just got through saying, and this is why.
Yep,
and
I agree.
And it's bad. It's bad. And anyway, we keep letting it go. We keep letting it go. I mean, these people are going to talk us out of our traditions, our heritage of a constitutional republic grounded in liberty and freedom from governmental interference, undue governmental influence. Not all government influence, of course, but undue governmental influence.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Did you guys hear about that cargo ship fire that was started by an EV?
3,000 automobiles caught fire. Most of them are electric.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard about it. I heard about it. For sure.
That's so environmentally friendly.
Oh, man.
Save the earth. Save the earth.
Yeah. These cars, by the way, have to be powered by petroleum. Fossil fuels is what's going to enable them to keep going, being charged. To say nothing of the damage that's done to the Earth's crust by strip mining, because every single lithium battery for a typical sedan-sized car requires about 500,000 tons of the Earth's crust to be dug up to make one electrical vehicle battery.
Mm-hmm.
Half a million, that's over 500,000 tons of minerals to get one vehicle battery that weighs about 800 pounds, which will wear out and cannot be disposed of other than in a landfill.
Yep. Well, you know, I don't know. They keep talking about how these things are so environmentally safe. Where does most of our electricity come from?
How is it generated, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, it's generated by various fossil fuels, coal, liquid natural gas, petroleum.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, where you're near enough to a body of rushing water, well, you have hydroelectric, which is the best of all worlds, basically, but not every locale is close enough to a moving body of water sufficient to generate enough electricity.
Yeah, that's
so most of it is going to be done. Like the Chinese are building coal plants like crazy. They are the biggest polluters on planet Earth per capita, given the amount of their productivity. They pollute more than every other nation on Earth. And they are not bound by any of these agreements about reducing the amount of coal-fired electrical plants. They are building them like crazy in northern China because they got coal up the yin-yang, and they intend to use every bit of it to expand their economic base.
Yep, and they don't have the regulations on the coal-fired plants that we do. So their plants are going to burn much dirtier and much filthier.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know all that. Is so, you know, so basically all the other countries in the world are going to be required to reduce their carbon emissions by so much percent, also that China, all to make up for China alone, basically, is what they're saying. You know, let China do what they want. China's polluting even more than, you know, I don't know how many countries combined that are part of, like, the UN and stuff. So they pollute more than all of those countries combined, and yet we're supposed to reduce ours even further so that China can do it even more. That makes a whole hell of a lot of sense.
Yep. And I got somebody else here on the phone. It's a 111 number. Hello?
Greetings. This is Brother Warren, host of New Orleans Wake Up. I was eating some chicken wings, and when I heard Sarge talk, I started choking, and I said, I got to call in. I got to call
Damn,
in.
Damn, I didn't talk. Why did I talk louder? You choked harder. You might not have been able to call in. Had the Heimlich on your head. Damn it. I missed my chance. I'm sorry.
So cough up your fur ball in another room.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Doggone it.
So let me say this, Robert. Let me say this, Robert. Let me say this. Right now, black Republicans are pushing back against the wording of that Florida curriculum. We heard Congressman Hurd out of Texas. We heard Congressman Donald out of Florida. We heard an organization that represents black conservatives has spoken out. Tim Scott has spoken out. And just today, another one has spoken out. Because let me tell you what's happening. And I know this because I have a cousin that's a black Republican in Florida I spoke to today. The black Republicans, just like the black Democrats you accused of, was expected to toe the party line, say the talking points. And when Congressman Donald broke from the script, the wrath of DeSantis members were coming out. So now what some of the black Republicans are saying, oh, no, no, you don't tell us what to think and how to feel about this. This is going down in Florida. And let me say this. Malcolm X was not a chattel slave. He was not owned and he was born after legal enslavement. All you have to do is read the numerous slave narratives and autobiographies that they wrote, and not one of them will mention anything nice about slavery. They were whooped every day. That's how productivity was assured, that a certain amount of cotton was picked or sugar cane was cut. They were tortured every day. And this is why some of those black Republicans understand how insane it is to try to imply that slavery was some job skills program. And this is why they're pushing back. So you all need to know this is happening.
Well, the problem with that is, like I said in the chat room, you can find anybody, as long as we're human, you can find anybody or somebody to agree with you, no matter how crazy your ideas are or how
I'm still going to find somebody
who's going to agree with me.
All you got to do is read the words of the people that were enslaved. The WPA interviewed over 2,000 of them in the 1930s. Then there were many, not just Frederick Douglass, there were many that wrote their story, like Solomon Northrup, 12 years a slave, a man who was free from New York, played the violin, got tricked in going to D.C., got kidnapped, shipped to Louisiana. Okay? And he tells you his story. None of them will back with you all. These were actually enslaved people. Why would you discount what they said, what they have said about their experience, just to believe some fantasy that slavery has some good elements to it?
Okay. I'd like to know again how even – I'm going to take his argument at face value that slaves were tortured every single slave was tortured every single day by their master on every single plantation in the South. And I'm going to take your argument for the sake of argument.
Sorry.
I'm going to say that every
–
let me finish now, sir. Wait, sir. I'm responding to your argument. Let me finish. All right, now, again, I'm going to say that your argument is true for the sake of argument only, that every single slave, every single day was tortured without exception. There was no one that was not tortured every single day. Now, does that mean they still couldn't acquire a skill that would redound to their benefit once they were released from slavery? Yes or no?
No, Sarge, because the skills that they had.
So they couldn't acquire skills.
Sarge, the skill that one may have benefited the slave owner, he owned them.
You didn't hear my question. Let me repeat my question again, and then I'd like to see if you can answer it. I'm going to say it again. After they were released from enslavement.
Did they have a skill that could redound to their benefit,
as the curriculum in Florida says it could?
After slavery, blacks faced discrimination in wage labor jobs.
Did not answer my question,
because
I didn't want to answer.
The question didn't make any sense. He did not answer the question. Your perspective is not backed up by facts.
You didn't answer the question, sir. And I'm knowing you did not answer my question, and you know why you didn't answer it, because you know what the answer is.
The answer was black people did not benefit.
He didn't answer my question.
They were owned during slavery, so the slave master owned them. Number two, after slavery, they couldn't get work because of discrimination for
Tell me something. How did William Ellison build up his plantation during slavery? when he manumitted himself from his slave master because he was a skilled gin cotton maker, a skilled ironsmith. Let me finish, sir. I'm responding to your point. I'm responding to you. I'm not ignoring you. Okay, I want to ask you this question. How did William Ellison, before the Civil War, manumit himself from slavery with his gin, cotton gin making skills, the fact that he was a blacksmith, the fact that he was an ironsmith, the fact that he had numerous other skills, that he was able to manumit from slavery, and then by using those skills he learned when he was born a chattel slave in North Carolina, he built up a 930-acre plantation valued in 1851 at $63,000, which is equivalent to $1,500,000 today, and he had 58 slaves of his own. You cannot explain that unless you take into account the skills he acquired as a slave before he manumitted himself.
Yep.
But you don't want to respond to that because you know it's true.
Well, I just muted him because one of the things that's going on here is that
he won't respond to questions. He just goes in another narrative. You ask him, I ask me a question, I answer. You ask him a question, he just launches into another narrative.
And that's why I muted him, because, you know, I gave him the time to say what he said. Then when you tried to answer him, he kept breaking in. So,
I mean, it doesn't bother me so much that he would interrupt me. What bothers me is he's determined not to answer questions that are uncomfortable for him to answer. He can ask me questions that are uncomfortable for me to acknowledge. I don't mind answering them, because the truth is the truth, and history is history, whether I like it or not. It should be the same for him, whether he likes the history or not. The truth and the facts of the history are the ones that should prevail. But no. With him, it's the agenda. The issue is never the issue. The issue is the revolution. Let's be honest about that with people like Warren. They literally do not want to have an honest discussion. They want a directed discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they will do. And you can see it right there. He won't answer questions, legitimate questions. How did William Ellison come to build up that sort of a plantation and that sort of empire if he didn't have skills that he obtained as a slave, which he used, by the way, to manumit himself? Because master let him keep some of the money, and some of the money that he kept, that when he farmed him out to do work, he allowed him to keep it. He saved that money, and he purchased his freedom with it.
Well, you know, I've read a lot about that kind of thing, and there were a lot of former slaves that actually did very well from what they learned while being a slave. And, you know, because they had to work, they had to do things, they got a skill set, which helped them later on. You know,
really one of the worst things it does, Robert? It negates the strength and the resilience of the black people who were enslaved. They weren't just passive victims in their own destruction or their own debasement. They developed strength, even as a result of being a slave, which they used to better themselves and their families. That is literally the historical truth. We have many, 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 many examples of people who were enslaved who went on to accomplish great things, either because of slaves, skills they obtained as a slave, in part because of skills they obtained as a slave, or skills they obtained shortly after slavery and because of the circumstances of slavery. I mean, but like I said, we can't have a nuance. Oh, no nuance. There's only one. You literally heard him say it. And he admitted, after I made the hypothetical, that every single slave was tortured every single day by every single plantation. They all did every single living slave that existed. That's literally what he said. Literally what he said. I thought he was going to be kidding him. But even though they had a... You know, they bought into a horrendous system of human bondage. I mean, that's bad enough. I think that should stand as, but to say they were just unrelenting torturers? Oh, he doesn't even believe that. I don't believe he believes it. I think he's just saying it in order to. I think the agenda is that since so many of the framers of the Constitution and the founders of the Constitution, not so many, but maybe about half of them, or maybe a little bit less, were slave owners, the signers of the Declaration, about 21 of them were slave owners. What they want to do is to say, since they were slave owners,
and there were hypocrites who wrote about all men being created equal. We can't honor any parts of their legacy. We have to tear down everything connected to the legacy and rebuild everything in a Marxist socialist vision. I believe that is their ultimate agenda. I am convinced of it. I've been studying them and listening to them for decades.
Yep.
I'm absolutely convinced of it. And that's why they're so dishonest about these subjects. I mean, look, slavery is bad enough. You keep someone in bondage, that is the ultimate degradation. But to say that you also torture them, you rape them every day, and all every single slave master did it to every single, come on. That's not true. You look at those slave narratives from people that die. Some of them do mention things like that. And others, you don't even see a word about it. They just talk about they had to work hard. They got times off here. The master will let them do this on a holiday and all this other stuff. And they talk about their lives. You don't hear in every single narrative unrelieved talks of torture, degradation, and debasement every day, all day. How are you going to get work out of people like that? The only way you can get work out of people like that is if you have an endless supply of slaves like they had in the Caribbean and West Indies. That's why they worked them to death there. They did work slaves to death in places like that because they had an endless supply of them. The United States helped to destroy slavery by its constitution that limited the importation of slaves into the United States legally after 1808. That's why the price of a slave was so high. Look at the price of a slave. You were paying almost $1,000, $2,000 for a healthy young male slave. Why were they so expensive? Because the supply was relatively limited.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have an endless supply of slaves to work to death.
And on top of that, slavery here in America didn't last that long because we outlawed it.
One long lifetime. That's how long the United States had slavery. One long, from 1776 to 1865 December. Talking about chattel slavery, since of not making a distinction, which I did. I think we did here carefully making the distinction of being a 13th Amendment slave by virtue of a conviction as opposed to a chattel slave. I think I made that clear, did I not?
Yes, you did.
Well, anyway, but again, we got rid of chattel slavery with the 13th Amendment. It left. And chattel slavery existed in the United States because I'm not going back to 1619. It was a British colony. That's it. Don't blame the United States. It didn't exist in 1619. I'm going to start with July 4th, 1776. And from that time, it was 89 years. 89 years of slavery in the United States. One long lifetime.
Yep.
But to hear them tell it, oh, God, you got to pay reparations from now until doomsday.
Yeah. But, you know, and the other thing
it's
that nobody
even mentions. I mean, it's the ultimate dishonesty as far as I'm concerned.
Well, you know, the other thing that nobody ever mentions is that while America was trying to get rid of slavery, everybody else had it, and that includes the blacks in Africa.
They still do. They still do. In Mauritania, it's almost rampant.
Yep.
There's slavery going on that southern border. These people say nothing about it, and they enable it.
Yep. And I see a lot of that because it's right down a couple hundred miles from where I live.
I talk to my colleagues who live in Texas all the time. One in particular, who I went down there to his ranch, he says now it's worse than it was when I went down there to help him in 2015. He says mm-hmm. It's exponentially worse. He's going to sell his ranch because he can't deal with it anymore.
Yeah, and a lot of them down there are doing that, just that.
You got rape trees, you got sex trapping, got 86,000 juveniles missing. They don't know where they are. What do you think is many of them, and not most of them, are? They're being trafficked, either as laborers or as sex slaves or both.
Well, you know, that's the thing.
Believe there was a recent study that says there are more slaves now in the world than there were legal slaves during the time slavery was legal, both in Britain and in the United States and elsewhere. I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know if that study is actually true, but it wouldn't surprise me before.
Yeah. Well, you know, there was a thing that I was had found was done by a man who does a talk show here in Albuquerque on KKOB, and he talked about what the Democrats have done to the great state of New Mexico, and he lists the border especially, how people are bringing in all these people and how the Democrats are allowing all of this to happen. And in the process, everything that they allowed to happen in the 80s and the 90s here in Albuquerque, Albuquerque was a hub for all kinds of things. GE was here. Intel was here. Well, they're still here. Digital was here. There was a whole bunch of those big companies that are here. They're all gone now except for Intel. And Intel actually in the 1990s wanted to expand and was asking the Democrats for water usage plans so that they could expand their plant. The Democrats wouldn't let them have it. So that plan that they wanted to expand here in New Mexico went to Arizona. And Intel is the only one left. And it listed three companies, WW Steel, Rio Grande Steel, and Dyson Tanks or something like that. All three of those are gone now. And it's all because of what the Democrats have done to this state. And with what they're doing now is they're leaving that border wide open and people can come in. And the governor is actually saying, come on in, come on in. You can do what you want. We will allow you to do that. And it's a mess down there.
Again, you know, all these things are happening because the basic principles upon which this country was founded are being abandoned. They are steadily being abandoned. And by the way, I'd just like to make one thing absolutely clear. Aside from murdering somebody or raping them, one of the worst things you can do to them is deny them their liberty for anything other than a proper crime for which they've been duly convicted. And then force them to work for free. That is one of the worst things you can do to a human being, and that would include human slavery, no matter how benign it may or may not have been. So I want to make that clear as a bell. It's one of the worst things you can do. But then again, it is also equally untrue to say that life with a slave was always, in every case at all times, unrelieved human misery with no redeeming aspects whatsoever. Both extremes are a lie and untrue. And I think, again, a proper discussion of history involves context. And context is impossible to understand slavery and the aftermath of slavery without making it clear that many slaves acquired skills that helped them survive. So they didn't all die after they were released from slavery. A lot, they had trouble finding jobs, but somehow they managed to survive. There wasn't a great big safety net. There wasn't welfare. There wasn't great society programs. How did all these newly freed, black, about 3 million some people, 3.5, 4 million people, how did they stay alive? They went on their hands and knees getting grubs out of the ground? No. They had things. They had abilities. They had resiliences. They had strengths. And they parlayed them not only in a basic existence, but into a relatively decent living, given what they were up against. And to deny them that legacy is to denigrate them.
Yep.
Am I wrong with my understanding? Correct me if I'm wrong here. But also, weren't some of the black fighters in the Revolutionary War also awarded land after their service? Like, if they actually, you know, those that actually survived it, weren't they offered a patch of land so that they could have their own farm and stuff like that?
Well, some were, but to be honest, some of them were actually gypped out of what they were promised. In fact, many of them whose masters, they were allowed to substitute their slaves, enslaved man, and in lieu of them reporting for service, they weren't manumitted when they got back. Many were. Some weren't. Some of them got cheated. But look, it's like everything else, man. There was corruption in everything. So it was actually both things actually happened. Some slaves were rewarded Salem Poor, I believe, was one of them. I think he was one who got acquired land as part. Well, actually, he got a pension, and he used his pension to purchase a farm for himself. But it depends. It depends on the individual soldier. It wasn't all of one or all of the other in any event. You know, black people have always been discriminated against in this country. Let's just face it; it's just true.
Well, there's no denying that. You know, there's no denying that.
Yeah.
But I was just saying that, you know, not all of them were. Yes, there's corruption, and a lot of them were ripped off. I mean, big surprise. Government, even back then, reneges on their deals. So, you know,
damn
nothing's
right.
really changed in that regard.
Damn right. Well, look, a lot of black people thought it was worth just taking a shot on gambling on this new idea of freedom. This new ideas that were being advocated, they saw potential in it, and they were willing to gamble on it. In some cases, it was simply a matter of being their home. It was like, look, it doesn't matter. Even Muhammad Ali during the Vietnam War said he would join up and fight if this country was invaded.
Mm-hmm.
He said he didn't want to kill no Viet Cong. There ain't no Viet Cong ever called him a nigga. So, I mean, that was it. But he said, clearly, I got the video where he's saying it, if this country is invaded, I will join, I will enlist to fight to defend it. And I believe he meant it.
Yeah, and I heard that one too.
So, I mean, you know, when your country is invaded, most people, even people who are in less than ideal circumstances, are going to want to defend it because it's simply their homeland.
Yeah.
I mean, look how Stalin got the Russians to fight for Mother Russia. How much worse can you treat somebody than Stalin treated his own people? But when the Nazis invaded the Soviet Union, you better believe the average Soviet citizen was ready to fight to the death to protect it.
Oh, yeah.
And he invoked the motherland, defending the motherland, and that's how he got there to get in the book, by invoking. Our motherland is being invaded. You take the average Johnny Reb. They might have not cared about slavery one way or the other, but when the Union Army of the Potomac came marching across in Virginia, you can't invade my country.
Yep.
It's the same thing. Any country gets invaded, man, that gets your hackles up. And you're ready to fight, no matter what your grievances are with your country.
Mm-hmm. There was one thing that I found, and this was changing the subject completely here. I found an article from, I think it was, doesn't even tell where it was from. No, Western Journal. But the headline on it was the Biden administration is now withholding funding from schools with hunting programs by blatantly misconstruing bipartisan law. And it says the Biden administration is blocking federal funding for schools with hunting and archery programs. Shouldn't something like that be illegal?
Wait a minute. The Biden administration is interfering with local school policies, but they're denying federal funds. Is that it?
That's it. It says Fox News reported that the Department of Education determined that under the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act passed last year, schools with hunting and archery classes are precluded from receiving funds.
Well, I'd have to see what the legislation says. If the legislation says something like that, he might be able to do it technically. Well, you would think somebody ought to be able to raise a stink about it to get it rolled back. Because Biden certainly, unless the legislation explicitly says you cannot allocate these funds to any school that has a program for archery or target shooting or whatever, unless it says that, I mean, that ought to be a way to roll it back. So I have to see what the legislation says.
Yep.
I don't see legislation like that passing without some sort of Republican support. And I don't think Republicans would support anything that would end structured programs of archery, which is an Olympic sport, as in target shooting. I don't see any program that should be banned by the federal government simply because a structured, organized program with proper safety protocols and teaching is automatically banned because it teaches an Olympic-level sport.
Well, it says here, it says GOP Senators John Cornyn of Texas, Tom Tillis of North Carolina and Democratic Senators Chris Murphy of Connecticut and Kristen Sinema of Arizona introduced the bill. The legislation included an amendment to the Elementary and Secondary Education Act prohibiting federal funds from helping provide any person with a dangerous weapon or provide training in the use of a dangerous weapon.
Oh, that's not a good one. Oh, man. These people, man, these hoplophobes. These people are hoplophobes. You know what a hoplophobe is, don't you?
Yeah, well, I've heard of it, but I don't.
Yeah, a hoplophobe, the term is Greek from hoplite. You know, hoplites were ancient Greek warriors, semi-soldiers, you know. And hoplophobia means the fear of arms and people who are armed.
Mm-hmm.
Unreasoning fear. These people are hoplophobes.
Yeah,
everything they do is arrest them. I mean, they want us to pay federal funds in violation of the Hyde Amendment to pay for military service members to travel to have abortions in states that will allow them to have abortions if they reside in a state where it's illegal. Now, they want us to pay federal money for that, to kill in a human life, okay? But they
mm-hmm.
don't want to have a program to teach you how to use a weapon in a sport. And not only is athletic competition, as is golf, but something that will enable you to lawfully defend yourself as well. These people are just, their inconsistencies are maddening.
Yeah, it goes on to say, at best, the department's policies appear to be singularly geared to ensure hunters are less safe when handling firearms or bows, and at worst, are leveling a direct attack on hunters' ability to pass down hunting to the newest generations. Lawrence Keene, Senior Vice President of the National Shooting Sports Foundation, agreed, accusing the Department of Education of blatantly misconstruing the law. They said, stopping hunter education courses that teach safe and responsible firearm handling makes our communities less, not more safe, and diminishes our ability to pass our nation's cherished hunting and recreational shooting sports traditions on to the next generation.
I guess it'll come out of the civilian marksmanship program next. You know what that is, Robert? The civilian marksmanship program?
I've heard of it. I took part in something like that. When I was growing up, you know, my dad taught me how to fire shoot, but I had, I took part in a club that was actually for teaching people how to handle firearms, things you don't do with them, the things you do with them. My dad always said, you never point a firearm at anyone unless you're going to kill them.
It's subsidized by the federal government. And they enable sales of M1 Garand rifles, M1911A1, 45 caliber automatic pistols, and M1 carbines to the general that's recognized by the Civilian Marksmanship Program, like the NRA, Second Amendment Foundation, a whole bunch of different local shooting clubs and whatnot. If you pass the normal background checks, they will give you at a reduced price a reconditioned M1 Garand rifle or a 1911 pistol or an M1 carbine. And I guess that'll be the target of their ires next. Civilian marksmanship program has been around for about, I don't know, 80, 90 years. I don't think anyone who's ever gotten a firearm has ever been implicated in any crime. But I imagine that should be the target of their ire next, then, if this one way this is.
Yep. But, you know, it amazes me because, you know, you would think that people would be more safe if people growing up were taught how to use guns and how to respect the power that they have.
That was true when I was growing up, man. We had an armory, and I was at Chicago Vocational High School in Chicago. That's where I went to high school, Chicago
mm-hmm.
Vocational. We had an armory for the ROTC in our basement at school. We had 44 M1 Garand rifles. We had two M1 carbines. We had three 45 caliber pistols and two M3 submachine guns and two Browning automatic rifles right there in the high school. and almost every high school that had an ROTC program in Chicago had a similar armory in the basement. And when the drill team would come in early morning to drill for ROTC, the drill instructor, I mean the ROTC instructor was a sergeant. We had a sergeant first class. He was a Green Beret. He got wounded in Vietnam. They sent him back to Fifth Army headquarters. Fifth Army headquarters was still in Chicago. And that was his assignment. The ROTC instructor at our high school. He'd turn over the keys to the arms rack to our cadet colonel, and he'd go have a cup of coffee. While we were there alone with all these military weapons that you saw in Saving Private Ryan. And you better believe the discipline and forethought was so strict. If anybody was caught playing around like cowboys and Indians with any of those weapons, that cadet colonel, and I'll never forget, his name was Robert Martin. He was a young black man. He took his job very seriously. He would drop us for push-ups and get in our faces and tell us to knock it off. And then he'd probably see that we got kicked off the drill team. So, I mean, we learned that guns are not toys and they're not playthings. And this was in Chicago High School. Lindblom was on the west side of Chicago, a really rough neighborhood. They had a similar arsenal in their school. Inglewood High School, they had a similar armory in their high school. Almost every high school in Chicago had similar armories. These were military guns. Now, true, they took firing pins out of them, but they've been taught how to disassemble them. We know where you can go to order firing pins real cheap in the mail. They send you a firing pin in the mail, and boom, it was easy to put firing pins. They were fully operational weapons otherwise, except the firing pin being removed. And we know where you get firing pins for every one of them.
Yeah.
And every once in a while we take out, maybe once a year we shoot the M1s. Once a year we get to shoot them and all this other stuff. But deadly, lethal instruments, and they were not play toys.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what I mean? That just shows how far we've come. That is not even conceivable. Even I, and you know how pro-Second Amendment I am, today, given the way kids have changed and the way the structures of things are today, even I don't think that would be a good idea. But it worked really good for us. It taught us discipline and responsibility.
Yep, it sure did.
Hey.
Well, you know, that's the thing that happened with me, you know. It's my dad taught me how to handle guns, how to respect them, never do the wrong things with them. He taught me how to respect a gun. And kids nowadays just don't get that kind of training.
No, I mean, they don't. I mean, they're taught guns are some sort of either demonic item that has imbued with its own set of evil siren-like powers calling upon you to pick it up and go do a school massacre, or some sort of glorified superhero action instrument that makes you turn into Superman. It's all these stupid extremes. It's a tool. You know, it has certain elegance of design, depending upon which one you're talking about. And certainly the history of firearms is interesting. After all, it took literally hundreds of years to even develop a self-loading firearm. Think about that. How long firearms have been around before they were finally able to develop a method of making a weapon load itself and unload itself. You know, eject the cartridge and put another one in. That took hundreds of years. And so as instruments, they're certainly interesting. But, I mean, they're neither extreme. Neither extreme of the spectrum I just described is true. It's in the middle. They're a tool that can be utilized for good or evil, depending upon who is wielding it and for what purpose. Nothing more, nothing less.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I totally agree.
I don't know, Robert, you know, I can see that New Orleans Blake has been kind of peaked out there. He's usually issuing more of his threats. He's trying to expose you for being a racist. He's threatening to say that you were saying that slavery was good for black people. I wish to reiterate. As usual, he's spreading his demagogic lies. No one said it. We just
Slavery was not good. Explicitly said, however, black people acquired skills that redounded to their benefit during slavery, after slavery, during slavery, and after. That's simply true. Slavery was not good for them. That is true. And the skills that they acquired during slavery was good for them. That is also true. That is called a paradox. Live with it, sir. I didn't make it. It's just the way it is. So, I mean, but he's getting kind of peaked. He says you're accusing him, you're censoring and all that. You know, I'm just bringing his attention because it's your show. You decide what you want to do. But yeah, I know any saying things about you that simply aren't true because people like him just make things up when things don't go their way. They literally say things that you didn't say. They will literally put words in your mouth you didn't say. You will explicitly say something, and I'll say you didn't say it. You actually said this. And then when you play the tape back, say, well, you must stop it.
Yep.
You can't win the losing with these folks.
Yep.
Oh, God, you can't win the losing with these folks. I mean, it is typical of them to issue threats. I mean, this is the way they run their business. They demagogue. God, I mean, it is so predictable. It's like nightfall following a sunset. It one goes right after the other. And like I said, we are in a world that has been grabbed by this. That's why now you have a lot of people out who actually believe transgenderism is a race.
Yep.
It's a race that needs protection. It needs civil rights protection.
Yeah.
This kind of thinking gets us there.
Yep. Yeah, I don't agree with that. Transgenderism does not deserve protection. Transgenderism,
they deserve protection as human beings, and they have the normal civil rights that accrue to every human being. They want the same sort of protections that would involve protection against racial discrimination or religious orientation.
That's the kind
of protection they want.
Yeah, what I was essentially saying was that we don't need to make laws to give them more protections because they've already got all the protections everybody else does. They don't need more.
I don't know. like I said, I think some mental illness. I think mental illness needs to be treated, not treated as a civil rights category. I think they are mentally ill. They have it appearing. Not all of them require any sort of intervention into their lives. So I'm not saying that you need to put them in mental hospital. Or a person is feeling paranoid or schizophrenic. We don't say, well, you are entitled to the protections of your schizophrenia, protections generated by your status as a schizophrenic or paranoid. We say, we hope you will get treatment so you can get over it and resolve it. We give offer people assistance in resolving their mental illness. We don't encourage it and say it's a good thing. We're going to talk about having National Pride Day for paranoia. Pride Month, for God's sake.
Yeah.
We don't do that. But with this type of mental illness, this is so special. It deserves civil rights protections like nothing I've ever seen with any other form of mental illness. It's astonishing. This is cultural Marxism writ large.
Yeah, absolutely. And now, you go right ahead, New Orleans Wake Up. Go ahead and push that. Because most of what you're saying is absolutely, completely off the wall wrong.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I mean, the man
Look.
The man has told me already that the only way you could be an authentic black Vietnam veteran is if you had a desire to frag your officers and disobey orders and mutiny. He literally told me that. He said that because I didn't agree with it, I couldn't possibly be an actual Vietnam veteran because every black Vietnam veteran was prepared to murder their officers and mutiny. That wasn't made them authentic. Now, I'm not making it up. Tell me God. And there's nothing I can do to persuade him that the truth of the matter is most men who served in Vietnam in combat, no less, served honorably, did not disobey their orders, and did not mutiny or frag their officers.
somebody told me.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to reason with somebody like that?
Well, you can't, because when you start, like I told him, when you start winning an argument on him, he'll change the subject so he's got something else.
Or he just won't respond to it. I mean, he just won't respond. He won't answer. He'll just ignore it and go on to the next thing. His next list, I guess he's got a list of atrocities that have been committed in the United States and just recites one after the other. And I guess that's supposed to be an argument. And it's not an argument. It's not. It doesn't directly speak to the question that you asked. Whereas, and I noticed that mostly in August, we will directly answer his argument. We'll directly answer it. He doesn't like our answers, but we do answer them.
Yeah. You know, and he's back to saying, he says, all I'm saying is that the sick racist fantasy to say that blacks benefited from slavery, even black conservative Republicans are coming out against that interpretation. Well, it's like I told him, he, as long as we are humans, he's going to be able to find somebody on both sides that's going to agree with him or say what he wants them to say. It's inevitable.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of glad in a way that some black people don't disagree about. One thing about conservatives, trying to get them to agree on things like trying to herd cats, just can't do it. I mean, we got opinions, we got strong, we're individuals.
Uh-huh.
I admire Byron Donaldson immensely. I would love to see him either run for president or be on a vice presidential team. I think he's unflappable, he's highly intelligent, and he's got guts. So I like him very much. I don't agree about everything. I don't expect him. And he's got an opinion that's contrary to mine. Fine. Let's talk it out. One thing I know about him, though, he would talk it out rather than try to demagogue it. He would actually have a conversation about it. And while I know, let me say this loud and clear, I know that slavery was not good for my ancestors. But for Sarge, it was good. Because without it, I wouldn't be in the United States, where I am today, happy and healthy. I am happy. I am healthy. I enjoy my life. It would not be possible without slavery. That's another paradox.
Yep.
Again, for my ancestors, it was undoubtedly elemental misery. Okay? I don't know how to make it any clearer than that. I can't, but it doesn't matter what people like Warren. Doesn't matter how much you say it, you're not really saying it. Unless you say, nothing good came out of slavery. Well, it did for me, because that's the way I'm here. That's how I benefited from slavery. I exist. I would not exist were it not for slavery. I benefited from slavery as an individual. Now, I know that's going to make him mad. I'd give a damn less. He did, too. His ass wouldn't be here if it wasn't for slavery. If he didn't want to exist, then be my guest. Off yourself. God,
yep.
This is so silly. Man.
Yeah. And he's back to talking about how conservative Republicans are working for Kamala Harris by white conservative, working for Kamala Harris by white conservative Republicans. Well, the problem with that kind of thinking is, sure, they may be Republicans, but they're not conservative.
I don't take my cues from anybody other than my conscience and my experience and what I have learned living my life. If anybody can make a persuasive argument to me that I should change my mind by presenting to me evidence, reason, and reason arguments and logic, I will be happy to. In fact, that's how I became a conservative, because I used to believe kind of like Brother Warren once upon a time. Because people gave me more pervasive, persuasive arguments and presented better facts and history to me. Now, if he or anyone else can make a reason and convincing argument as to why I should abandon the positions that I presently hold, I'd be happy to listen to them. But I listen to them all the time. In fact, I even repeat back to them their arguments that I did this moment ago.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when he said that slavery was unrelieved terror and misery and rape and horror and torture and debasement from sunup to sundown? When they got up, they got tortured every single one of them, every single day, no timeouts, no nothing. I said, okay, let's say that's true. That mean they couldn't learn a skill while they were being tortured and debased? He didn't answer. I'm dealing right with his point. He didn't try to persuade me. He just, you know, denigrates me or calls me names or ridicules me or whatever. You know, and this is why they are not persuasive. They don't even attempt to make an argument. They attempt to demagogue and bully and intimidate you.
Yep. And
they don't make arguments. They really don't make reasoned arguments.
Yeah.
That's why they have defensive speech.
I told him that a lot of these so-called conservative Republicans who are agreeing with Kamala Harris, I said, they're not conservatives. And he comes back with, oh, Robert, those black conservatives are no longer conservatives because they challenged the slavery as a good narrative. Robert, you are beyond help. Well, thank you.
See, once again, he just makes up things about what we said. We have literally disavowed that argument since we've been on. It doesn't matter how many hundreds of times he'll tell us we're doing it anyway. Because, like I said, he is fundamentally dishonest, and he attributes that sort of dishonesty to everyone else. He projects. He is what he claims we are. I know what my position is. I don't have to apologize. I used to be in his position. I used to agree with him on mostly everything. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. I mean, when we had the argument about nationalism, what a black, I'm a black nationalist in the meaning of someone who thought black people should have their own nation and separate them in the United States. That was a position I held once upon a time. I listened to Malcolm when he was in that Nation of Islam phrase. He was a very impressive speaker, very persuasive. I had this guy I used to go to school, and not go. He was like our tutor. He was a gentleman named Upumdisi Umbala. That was the name he had given himself as he rejected his slave name. And Upumdisi was charismatic, a great speaker. He had us. He would set us and lecture us for hours. He had us enthralled. He was. I don't know what the guy became, but if he had gotten the right circumstances, man, he could have been like Charles Manson or something. I mean. We would sit there and listen for hours, man, and we just, man, that's deep. You know, we're talking like that, right? I know what the power of an argument is. I've heard all of this before, and I predominantly believed it.
Yeah.
And so I'm waiting for this evidence that should make me abandon everything I've learned since. When is it going to come? It doesn't come. They only seem to get more desperate and try to bully you more.
Mm-hmm. That they do. And then if you don't go with what they want you to say, then the name calling starts.
It's predictable. Like I said, it's like night following sunset. It's as predictable as it can be. Cancel culture. It's something that came about with wokeism, because when people got woke, they had to go start sleepwalking. Another paradox for you. Oh, man. Woo! We are living, you know, the Chinese say, one thing about Chinese, they do have interesting things. You know, Confucian sayings are very interesting oftentimes. I've read Sun Tzu in The Art of War, and Chinese are very interesting philosophically, but they have one saying that really is true. May you live in interesting times. God help us. We are living in the most interesting of times, perhaps ever, right now.
Yep. That we are. We're living in very interesting times. And it's almost tiring to try to put forth the idea that, you know, right is right and wrong is wrong when everything that comes out of the left these days is that if you consider right right, then you're completely wrong. It's tiring.
Yeah. Al Gore said it once back during he was running as president back during the 2000 campaign. Everything that should be up is down, and everything that down should be down is up. You know, I mean, hey, that fits these times exactly.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, I've been trying to find that that guy's name that was at my church tonight that was from Nairobi or Nigeria, and it's a name you know, one of those really long names. I couldn't even begin to, I could probably spell it if I could find it, but I'm not finding it yet because they haven't changed the art, the pages yet.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And, I talked to him after the service, and he told me, I told him that I'd like to do a show with his sermon on there. And he says, I hope you do. So as soon as he talks at the main campus tomorrow night, then I'll be able to get it recorded. Because he said some fantastic things that go completely against what Black Lives Matter says and what all these, the leftists say. So it's, oh boy.
Yeah, well, you know. Hey, I don't know. You were listening early on Vince's show. Vince allowed me to play that clip of Dr. Allen explaining why Kamala Harris is full of SH9. Would you like to let your listeners hear what that black scholar had to say about the reason they put this particular aspect in there? Would you like to hear him in his own words and tell why Kamala Harris is full of SH9T lying demagogue? And he makes her look like the dummy that she is. And she is truly moronic. Truly, she is. Would you like your listeners to hear it?
Yeah, I actually did. I was actually at the show, so I was, I was in the chat room, so I was able to listen to the whole show. It was actually a pretty good one.
Yeah, well, if you'd like me to, I'll play it, and you can hear Dr. Allen explain it in his own words.
Yeah, that would be good.
Okay, I'm going to put it on right now. Then let's listen with Dr. Allen. A scholar, an esteemed African-American studies scholar, has heard in his own words what the purpose of this particular aspect of curriculum was.
Yeah. It is the case that Africans proved resourceful, resilient, and adaptive, and were able to develop skills and aptitudes which served to their benefit, slaves and after enslavement.
Well, what ABC didn't air was this.
Other countries of Ohio counted so far as a single one that articulated by the vice president, and which was an error, as I stated in my response to the vice president, categorically false. It was never said that slavery was beneficial to Africans. What was said, and anyone who reads this will see this with clarity, it is the case that Africans proved resourceful, resilient, and adaptive, and were able to develop skills and aptitudes which served to their benefit, both while enslaved and after enslavement.
Now, one of the authors of the Florida curriculum, Dr. William Allen, joins me now. But Dr. Allen, why do you think Kamala Harris is being dishonest about what's being taught about slavery?
Kamala Harris is noted. They're invisible. I don't know them. We can all have suspicions that there's a dishonest purpose afoot. What's more important than that dishonest purpose is the truth. And this curriculum is devoted to telling the truth, whereas Kamala Harris has retailed a lie. Now, it may only have been a falsehood the first time she stated it, but when you repeat a falsehood, it becomes a lie.
Tell her right now what specifically this component of the slavery course teaches.
Permit me to have Frederick Douglass tell her. He wrote an autobiography in which he described how the mistress of his slave owner began to teach him to read. She pulled back the curtain through which a glimmer of light shone before the master forced her to close it. But that glimmer of light was enough for Frederick Douglass to illumine a bright flame that he exploited to his benefit and his country's benefit thereafter. Such examples are numerous, and they're retailing the story of people who suffered the indignity of slavery time and again. And quickly, permit me to say, what this curriculum is about is having people who live the experience, who live the history, tell their stories. And nothing is more important than that we never to interpret before first understanding the stories of the people who lived them, understood them themselves.
Are there academics that disagree with your scholarship?
Well, there are certainly academics who call it a contest. Whether you consider him or thought Richardson an academic or not may be questionable, but she hasn't read left, questioned it. But her questioning is as irrelevant as Kamala Harris's falsehood, even though she directly cites the sentence that was called into question. Why? Because what is being done here is the attempt to create stories for our time and impose them on people who told the stories in their own time, thereby erasing their stories. My grandfather came to this country through fraudulent inducement, looking for opportunity only to find himself a slave. But he had the pluck to seek opportunity. And that pluck that he brought with him provided the skills, provided the initiative that allowed him, for slavery, to establish his family securely. And this is the story of millions of people. Those stories must be told as people who have experienced them. And no one should be allowed to erase those stories.
Why do you think some people are uncomfortable having a conversation about the graphic and real nature of what slavery was like?
They have an agenda. They don't want slavery to be told from a certain perspective. Indeed, it's a wonderful irony if you think about it. But they are accusing the workforce that developed the curriculum of embracing a popular school of slavery. That 19th century abuse, which I have refuted in my scholarship and many other people thought, these people are saying this is what's being presented in front of. That's an absolute falsehood. If anybody is presenting a positive school of slavery, the heirs of people like Calhoun, Tawney, and Michael, who continue to propagate the false picture that the birth of the nation was nothing but slavery. I can point out quickly enough, Frederick Douglass, undoubtedly well in 1893, demonstrated in protesting the exclusion of blacks from the world here in 1893 and mixed thousands of Indians that the accomplices of black people for slavery were the accomplices not just of black America, but the accomplices of American principles. And that is the truth that people seek to deny by erasing the stories that people read through the history.
Poor Dr. Allen, thank you for seeking the truth. I wish more people could have this honest conversation about our history. Bring a lot of Americans together.
Like I said, I think that man effectively refuted all the distortion, demagoguery about the force here. Again, it does not say slavery was beneficial for anyone, much less people who were enslaved. It simply points out the skills that they had, that they attained, that they used for their benefit and the benefit of their family. That's all it does, because that's important to understanding how people like William Ellison amassed his own slave empire.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You can't begin to understand how he did it unless you talk about the skills he acquired while he was a slave. Parlayed those skills into his own plantation empire after he got out of slavery. He sold his skills, which were considerable.
Yep.
He was an excellent cotton gin maker, an ironsmith.
Yep. One of the things that I wasn't able to do tonight, and Lorianne just said something about, don't forget her show tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Pacific. I have her thing on here. I'm going to play her ad that that I didn't play earlier today, and this is changing the subject a little bit, but I needed to get this in here.
Tune in for the Lucid Libertarian with Lorianne Show, Sundays 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, to discuss current events, news, and political opinion with Lucid Libertarian flair. I promote liberty, freedom, our Constitution, Bill of Rights, and limited government, while speaking against corporate and government corruption, tyranny, and the globalist Great Reset agenda that undermines our precious American sovereignty. Please also like and follow my Lucid Libertarian with Lorianne page on Facebook. You can help me battle their freedom-loathing censorship by visiting my page regularly, along with reacting, commenting, and sharing my posts. Thank you, and I hope listening to my show becomes part of your Sunday night routine.
Okay, I just had to play that because I didn't get to do that at the beginning of the show. So there you go, Lorianne. I just did it.
Thank you for doing that. I appreciate it. No problem. I know you were planning on playing a couple other ads too, but then We just got right into the show, so no problem.
I didn't even play my intro on this on tonight.
Yeah, just so, jumped right into the deep end.
Yeah, which was kind of fun. I see people who are not on the phone or are leaving the chat room. So, but this. Yeah, last night was kind of a pain in the rear end for me. It's like, you know, I've been, like Sarge was saying earlier, what happened last night was essentially my fault. I was outside and the sun was still shining, so I wasn't thinking anything about it being close to time for my show. So I just totally missed it. So that's the reason why I ran tonight.
Hey man, I know how it is when you get hooked up and you're working on a car, because I've been there, done that myself, man. I work like 16 straight hours trying to get an engine in and out of a car.
Yeah, well, that
I mean, I get absorbed in that auto mechanic stuff, you know?
Yeah, well, that goes just way beyond what I can actually do, you know? It's like with my car, I need to do the same thing with my car. Mine's a Mustang with a 4.6 V8 in it. And
uh-oh,
taking the fan out of that thing is going to be just almost child's play, because it's two sprues and disconnecting the fan from the wiring. And then I just lift the fan out. With her car, it's a totally different thing, because the whole front end has to be taken apart in order to get to that fan. So it's a pain.
What kind of car is it?
Hers is a 2015 Hyundai Veloster.
Ah, so it's front-wheel drive car?
Yeah. And mine's a Mustang, so it's rear-wheel drive, so.
And the radiator fan, is it in front of, or is it to the front end of the car, or the aft end of the front end?
Oh, it's to the front end of the car, but the engine sits sideways.
Yeah, transversely.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I tell you, I can see how you might have a little trouble getting to the fan, because you probably got to take the air cleaner and a lot of other stuff out of the way to get active.
Yeah, and that front bar that goes above the radiator has to come out.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right.
The radiator out. And,
now, is,
and
it, is it bolted in, or is that spot welded in? How is it retained?
There are 10 bolts holding that one in.
Oh, okay. I see what you mean. I get set up now. Okay.
Yeah,
it's a little bit of work, but it's cheaper than taking it to a mechanic. I think how much you can do it, you ought to do it.
Well, I have a friend who lives down the street who's a retired mechanic, and he said he'd do it for me, so I'm going to take it over to his house tomorrow, and he'll do it for me. I've got all the parts.
You
got to
take the hood latch. You got to take the hood latch cable out of the way and everything?
Yep, absolutely.
But I pretty much got an idea what you got to do. It's not that difficult, but if you've never done it before, it can be a bit daunting. But
yeah,
I guarantee you probably studied it a little bit and go on YouTube and get a couple people explain how people, all kind of people, they explain how it can be done. You probably do it yourself. It really isn't that difficult.
Yeah, that's what I was doing with her car, and it there was a lot of steps to it. But with mine, it's just I got to take three screws out of it to take the overflow tank and move it out of the way, and then there's two screws holding the fan on, and I can take it right out of there. With her car, I cannot take that fan off until the radiator's out of there, and then I can take it off the radiator.
Well, I did the opposite. I took the mechanical fan off of my Hummer and put in two electric things.
Yeah.
Then I had to put a controller in there to make it work properly. But I put a digital controller in there to make it work properly, and I put a smaller fan in front of the condenser so I get good airflow through the condenser. So when the vehicle wasn't moving, I still have good air conditioning.
Yeah.
And then I put the larger fan behind the radiator, and both of them pull the airflow through the radiator as though the car was moving in forward in that direction.
Yeah. Well, that's my project for tomorrow. So.
You already got electrical fans in both cars, right?
Oh yeah, they've both got the electric fan. The only one that I've got is for my wife's car, so I've got that one. My car uses more gas, so she thought hers was more important. So.
Well, electrical fans are more efficient than a mechanical fan. And that's why I got rid of the mechanical. I noticed a bit of a horsepower increase as soon as they got up in the gas mileage. Improved maybe, I don't know, a mile, a gallon, the scene. And in fact, when I started recording, it actually did. So it actually has benefits, both a little bit more power and a little bit better gas mileage. Get rid of the mechanical fan if you got it and put in an electrical fan.
Yeah. Well, both cars have got the electric fan, but mine's the one who's my Mustang's the one that's got the easy one to take out and put back in. It'll take me about 30 minutes, I think, at the most. But hers is a totally different animal, so I'm going to let my friend do the work on that one.
Well, don't get it over here because you can wind up costing yourself more money than you otherwise. It sounds to me like you got enough aptitude. If you studied enough, you could probably do it yourself.
Yeah, I've been watching a lot of YouTube videos on them. So
yeah,
so and then my dad
for mechanics in all automobiles pretty much work on it. Look, the principle of the internal combustion has been around since 1896, and they haven't changed for a four stroke in suck, squeeze, bang, blow. They all still work the same way they did in 1896. Just they've gotten a lot fancier with all the electronic stuff and all the other stuff there. But that's basically where they all work.
Yep, that's for sure. But, you know, with all the computer stuff in them now, that, you know, when my first car was a 68 Torino GT, and it had the 302 in it, and I knew that engine inside and out, and there were no computers, so it was really easy to work on. But, boy, they're totally different now when it comes to that.
Yeah. Well, again, but still it doesn't change suck, squeeze, bang, blow. It's still the way it does. It's got a lot of electronic components that have taken place, a lot of the mechanical ones. Like you used to have a mechanical distributor and a breaker point system, and it was all mechanical, electrical. It was pretty easy to understand, you know, is how it all worked. But now you got more precision because everything's electronically controlled by a digital computer.
Yeah. Yeah,
and because they don't remember back in the mid-60s, Chevrolet had electronic fuel injection like in the Corvette and in some of the models of the Bel Air, I think, or the Impala, which, but they had trouble making it work because it was mechanical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a mechanical fuel injection system, and they couldn't get it working. It wasn't like the fuel injection system they had in the aircraft, which was a bit different. So that was a mechanical system, too. The ones they tried to put on the cars, they just couldn't get them to work properly until they started having digital electronics. And now, boom, we all know electronic fuel injection is more efficient than a carburetor. Unless, of course, you're making a drag ship. You know, the only purpose of your drag car is dump as much fuel down into the intake manifold as you can and burn it. And everything's set to run wide open. That's the only advantage the carburetor's got these days. Other than that, fuel injection is more efficient.
Yep. Yeah, I remember with my first car, I think about every 10,000 miles at the most, I had to change the points.
Yeah. You had to adjust them. If not change them, at least adjust them because they would wear.
Yeah.
You know, they wear, they rub down the rubbing block on the distributor rotor would wear down, or the distributor or the points themselves, or they pit, and you had to file them or replace them. And, it was a regular maintenance. I mean, you start thinking of the amount of maintenance you got to do on old cars just from two generations ago. You had to regularly grease the suspension. You know, you had to change the oil maybe every 5,000 miles.
Yeah.
PCB valves, likewise. These new cars are, if they're made properly, they're very, I mean, you can go 50, 60, 75,000 miles before you need a tune-up.
Yeah. Absolutely. I had a 96 Mustang that I got from my dad when he died, and that car, I think it had 113,000 miles on it before I had to do anything to it. So
but now, you know, you got that when the car goes in a closed loop, meaning
then, you know, it starts taking signals from, like, the oxygen sensors, and you get a feedback loop when the car goes in what they call closed loop, and it's taking all the information from various sensors on the engine block and in the exhaust stream and from the evaporative emission controls. Everything is so timed and set up. You got the purge valves working. You got, you know, the crankshaft position sensor and the camshaft position sensor. And it's all this digital wizardry. And there's no way you can accurately diagnose them without a scan tool.
Yeah, absolutely.
To be able to look at the you know, the electrical oscillation, see if they're working right or not.
You
open up a distributor. Oh, I can see the bad points. Oh, I can see you take a multimeter and you check the resistance between the positive and negative terminals on the coil. Ah, bad fault. You know it right away.
Yeah.
It's really so simple.
Absolutely.
But now, you got to have the right tools in order to be able to diagnose, but it's still suck, squeeze, bang, blow. That ain't changed. Four-stroke engine still works the same way it did when Benz, the German guy, developed the automobile internal combustion engine back in 1895.
Yep.
It still works the same way.
Pretty much, yeah. That's exactly right. That, you know, with all the electronic parts goes well beyond what I can do. So
and the precision of manufacture is so much more, so much tolerance is so much tighter. The metallurgy is better. You know.
Yeah.
You got, you can't run it. You couldn't run those old cars today in the gasoline we got today. They got lead in them. The lead was cushioning the valves when they would, when the engine was running. Now they got to have the valve seats got to be hardened. Because you try to run an old car and new gas, you're going to ruin the valves in no time.
Yep, that's for sure. But,
The gas.
Yep. New Orleans wake up finally left.
I ain't getting frustrated because you wouldn't let him talk.
I saw that earlier, and I was like, good, he wants to return.
Yeah, he wants to recite an endless catalog of the nation's sins. That's basically his argument, to recite a catalog of the nation's sins. I mean, he'll sit there and recite to you some sin from 1896 or 1875 or 1876, and he'll act like it's today.
Yep. And one of the last things he told me, he says, Robert, you are a dishonorable man. You don't fight fairly. You are a coward. And I says, I am neither dishonorable nor a coward.
Name calling and threats. See?
That's exactly. Now, and I told him, I said, I'm neither dishonorable nor a coward. I just know when a person won't let anyone but himself win.
I just wish he would have taken my bet so I could show, you know, because I'm not going to show him my military record unless there's money to be made. If money be made, I will happily show it. I'll show him where I served. What my decorations are, what my military occupational specialty was, where I was stationed. You'll see everything right there. I can make it up. I got certified copies in the VA.
Yep.
Now, if he wants to make a bet and he wants a bunny on it, I'm all for it, man. $5,000. That's $5,000. Put $5,000 on the table. You can see all my records with all my name on it and everything. That's money to be made at that, and, man, I'm all in for that.
Yep.
Let me know.
He's just a troll. Like, he is one of those people that, you know, kind of typical Democrat, like, what would they actually do with themselves if racism was completely eradicated? You know, like, they live and thrive on it. They don't know what the fuck to do with themselves, really, if they're not in this, you know, this constant race war, you know?
Yeah.
And they'll just keep going there and going there. We could be talking about, oh, yeah, there's a meteor shower tonight. Oh, cool, with a full moon. Oh, cool, even better. And then Warren will come up and start yammering on about, you know, well, slaves weren't allowed to look at the full moon, and they, you know, they weren't allowed to look at
the
meteor shower. They were locked up in chains in the barn when those things were going on. You know, like,
yeah. Galileo was a racist.
a white supremacist.
I'll tell you, he would have gone
absolutely. Oh God, here we go.
He would have gone absolutely crazy if he'd have heard that pastor that talked at my church tonight, what he was saying, because he's black, and he was talking about how even black people are now telling him that he's white, that he dresses white, he preaches in a church, so that means he's white. He says, do I look white to you? He says, am I doing a good job?
Well, I tell you.
So a pastor that actually dresses professionally, instead of wearing his pants down to his knees and everybody seeing his underwear and having to hold him up constantly while he's walking, apparently he's white because of that.
Oh, well, I tell you one thing. You better not go see Oppenheimer then, because even though it's a pretty diverse movie, I mean, you got Czechs in there, you got Hungarians, you got Germans, you got Englishmen, you got Russians, you got, of course, all kinds of Americans in there. It's pretty diverse, but there's not many black people in it. And one of the things they're going after Oppenheimer for is the fact that, you know, he's got all these communist associations. That was a big part of the movie. And you got all these fellow travelers and communists he's associated with. And he definitely was hooked up with it. He didn't make any bones about it. He admitted that they were there, but he said, I didn't betray anything about the Manhattan Bomb. It wasn't my fault that the Soviets got the bomb, which is probably true, but he was so damn careless about it. He acted like it didn't much matter with all these people, all these guns. Because, look, the British let the guy into the project at the British recommendation, a guy named Klaus Fuchs. Klaus Fuchs was recommended by the British. He was a Soviet agent. And he was passing on every bit of technical information he could get about the Manhattan Project to the Soviets, which is why Stalin wasn't a bit surprised when Truman told him he had the bomb and they were getting ready to use it against the Japanese. He said, well, I'll make good use. He wasn't surprised because he knew everything already.
Yep, he absolutely did.
But you couldn't blame that on Oppenheimer. But Oppenheimer was so careless about security and the type of people he associated with, they said he was a security risk.
Yep.
So it's an interesting movie. If you haven't seen it, you might want to catch it. It's long. I'm telling you, it's long, but it's well-paced. It moves well. That actor was on Peaky Blinders. I don't know if you saw it or not, but you ought to see it. That's pretty good, too. He does a really good job of portraying Oppenheimer. He looks like him, and he's got that gaunt look he had and everything else.
Yeah.
Good movie.
Yeah, I'm going to have to see that. The other one I've got to see is that Sound of Freedom, because I haven't seen that yet, and I really want to see that movie.
Well, I'm going to see that this weekend. I definitely want to see that one.
Yeah, I definitely do, too. But I'm going to go ahead and go, and then we can go over to Ron's show, because it's probably going full blast now. So, but
yeah, that's true. Yeah, he kicked it off, what, about 25 minutes ago or so. I told him I would make my way there after we wrap up here.
Yeah. I'm glad that you were there, Sarge. Sorry I let Warren in there for a bit, but I finally...
I don't mind. I really don't mind. The only thing that matters about him is not the arguments he makes. It's utter non-responsiveness and his demagoguery. I mean, that's what irritates. Not these absurd arguments he makes. I mean, I can deal with him all day long. That's no problem whatsoever. I can do that almost in my sleep, beat back those arguments. It's just demagoguery and the sheer dishonesty.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the thing that kind of pissed me off about this whole thing and what got him to calling me a coward and all this stuff is that, you know, during the time that he was explaining things, everybody was quiet. They let him talk. They let him say what he needed to say. And then when you tried to say, you know, give your answer to him, he wouldn't shut up. So I finally decided to help
him. Based on what he said. I know what he says. I want to respond to the things he says. I'm trying to – look, he gives a catalog of the nation's sins, and that's his whole argument. Catalog the nation's sins. That's his entire – modus operandi. I listen to people's arguments and I respond to them. To do that. He literally makes up things about your arguments you didn't say.
I mean, in the switchboard, you know, I even labeled him as Narcissist Warren because that's what he is. He is a full-fledged freaking narcissist in every single way. That's why, you know, he does not know how to actually show respect. He demands respect from other people, but he will not show the same respect to others that he demands. And that is, like, such a total narcissist trait to have. You know, and I just thought, like, he knows, like, I'm not going to bring him on air. Last week, he didn't show up even in the chat. And I was glad for that. And, you know, and I'm going to do the same thing. You know, if he calls in and it's him, I'm going to mute him. You know, like, no, I'm paying for my airtime here, not you. And I, you know, I am not going to allow him to waste my airtime anymore, you know. And, you know, I encourage other shows to do the same thing. You want to talk to him? Well, he has plenty of shows on his network. Go and call him and put them there. You know, but we don't have to let him in on ours.
He doesn't
know how they operate.
And when he gets angry at somebody, he'll do a show about them. And he'll make up things about what they said when they didn't even say it. That would give me. And he literally makes up things you didn't say.
Yep.
Or else he'll say that you really didn't.
Exactly.
You really didn't mean what you said. You meant this, even though you said this.
Yep. And you know, and that's one of the reasons why he hates Vincent, because Vincent don't put up with his bullshit. He won't let him on the show. You know, he can be there, but he keeps him quiet and keeps him muted up. You know, which is what,
you know,
I
got people whose shows I go on who don't agree with me at all, and we have conversations about the issues. We never get personal.
Mm-hmm.
We have conversations about the issues. We don't agree at all, practically, but we have, you know, informed, reasoned conversations. And at the end of the day, we learn something about the other person's position, even though we don't agree. That's all I ask. I don't need agreement.
Yep.
All I need is clarity. I never need agreement. I don't need agreement with anyone, although I'm happy to find it. But I'm more interested in clarity than I am agreement. And I tell you, man, the warning, you're not going to get either. You're going to get demagoguery, falsehood, distortion, name-calling, and bullying. That's pretty much it.
Yep, and that's you're exactly right on that, because, you know, if he starts losing an argument, or if he thinks he might be losing an argument, he starts name-calling. And that, I'm tired of that. That's why
I'm accusing you of disingenuousness. He loves to accuse you of disingenuousness. And that's what he mildly.
Yeah. Well, that's why I'm muted.
If you call him out on his own lies and his own twisting of your words and his own name calling and childish behavior, then you're just playing the victim. Again, another narcissist trait. You know.
It's called gaslighting.
On my own bad behavior. You're just
Charles
playing the victim.
Hey, didn't Charles Boyer do that to Ingrid Bergman? What do they call that again?
Gaslight? I'm not sure.
Gaslighting. That's it. Gaslight. Yeah, that's what
they
call
gaslighting.
It. Yeah. I ain't Ingrid Bergman. You ain't Charles Boyer.
Yeah.
I mean, those that are abusive, like mentally and emotionally abusive people, that's another one of their traits. You know, that's something, I mean, I would not be surprised one bit if he, you know, in relationships, current or in the past, has been an emotional and mental abuser. And, you know, because I just can't imagine having a relationship with somebody like that. Well, actually, I can't imagine, because I've been in a relationship like that. And it's like, you know, it's purposeful crazy making so that they can turn everything around on you when you react. When you call them out on their behavior, they will turn it all around on you. They will make you question yourself. It is psychological manipulation. And narcissists definitely do that. And sociopaths do that. A lot of sociopaths are narcissists. But the two are different things. But, you know, so I see the patterns all over the place, and it's like, nope, I've been there. I've done that. I've been around enough people that are like that, and I don't want any part of it. I'm not going to let you mentally fuck with my head. You know, I am not going to let you try to emotionally manipulate me. I don't have to. You know what I mean? So I'm not going to.
Yeah.
Well, and so when it comes to Lauren, it's like, no, you're done.
And the categorical exclusivity of many of his statements, you know what he said? Like, every single slave was tortured, whipped, and beaten every day.
Mm-hmm.
And he literally said that, and he believes it. Well, he professes to believe it. I don't think he actually even believes that anymore, and I believe every slave was like Mammy and Gone with the Wind. I mean, Jesus, there's a happy medium here in this thing. I mean, slave owners weren't cut out of cookie cutters?
No, they weren't.
I mean, a lot of the slave owners, you know, not all of them were like uber rich either. You know, some slave owners only had like one or two. It was, you know, they were a lot of money. It was not cheap to buy a slave. And so a lot of them would treat their slaves very well. Why? Because they knew if I beat them every day, they're not going to be able to go out and work every day.
God, like, man.
You know, it defeats the whole fucking purpose of buying them.
Yeah, and that was the beauty of the American
system. That really needs a farm man. It's like,
yeah,
you know.
The American Constitution limited the number of slaves because you couldn't import them legally into the country after 1808. So you either got slaves on the black market through the illegal slave trade, slave running trade, which made them more expensive, or you had to pay the prices, jacked up prices on the slave auction market. Now, death rate for slaves in the West Indies and the Caribbean was much higher because they had an endless supply of slaves. They didn't have to worry about treating them as well for simple pragmatic reasons. Okay?
Yeah.
In the United States, that's why they go, who the hell buys an expensive sports car and then doesn't take care of it? That's what it literally costs, relatively speaking, to own a slave in the 19th century. They were comparable to what an expensive horse would cost, a healthy male slave.
Yeah.
So it didn't make any sense.
Yeah, exactly. And you don't go out and buy a Lamborghini just to go drive it around and smash it in the mailbox.
Beat it with a sledgehammer.
You know,
Jesus, that makes no sense.
Well,
I mean, forget morality,
I'm...
forget ethics. We're talking just sheer pragmatics. Do you want work out of this strong young buck or not?
Yeah, well, I was just reading the transcript of my chat room when he walked in, and the very first thing he did. You and New Orleans Wake Ups joined at almost exactly the same time. And Lorianne said, "Hi, Sarge, good to see you." And then New Orleans Wake Up says, "Greetings, everyone. I will be leaving out of country on Monday, but I have left an archived library of highly informative shows about white privilege."
Yeah. You want to hear somebody endlessly castigate you simply for being white and born that way.
Yeah,
that everybody's looking forward to it.
Yep.
Yeah,
and, I'm thinking about
it. I go around to all the live blog talk shows, and I'm like, hey, listen to my really great show I had last week. Here's the link. Good to see ya. You know.
You know, and I'm thinking about
what is that?
This endless beating up on white men is getting to the point now where it's getting dangerous. Because now they can't get white men to join the service. And we all know that if the country's got to be defended, most of the men in the country are white men, whether we want them to be or not, whether we want them to be white men or not, whether we say, I hate the fact white men are most of the men in this country. The fact of the matter is that they are. And if we want the country defended, we're going to have to rely on white men, whether we like it or not. And they're doing everything they can to convince white men they got no stake in defending the country. This is getting dangerous.
Yep. And then he started out with his links, and it was like session one, and the first link was white privilege is real, and it believes blacks benefited from slavery. And this is before you even said anything. Then the next one said, white privilege session two, controlling the historical narratives for whites. And then the third one said, a white man's view of white privilege, session three. And then he says, I am becoming a bit of a folk hero here on Blog Talk. Many of Black Blog Talk hosts have been sending me emails praising my work.
Yeah, I'm sure birds of a feather flock together. I mean, this guy's an admirer of Francis Cress Welsing. You know, are you familiar with the writings of Dr. Welsing, the late Dr. Welsing? Are you familiar with any of them?
I've heard of some of them, yes. I'd
oh,
like
my God. You ought to familiarize yourself with them. Many of them are rather disturbing, and he's a fan of hers. He praises her regularly. And if you've ever read, I've got a copy of her book called The Isis Papers, Keys to the Colors. And she writes some things in there that are downright Nazi-esque.
Yeah.
I mean downright not Nazi-esque. And among a lot of, and I hate to use the phrase because, now in this case I'm using it in the sense that Warren thinks it should be used, black nationalists, Dr. Francis Cress Welsing is almost a demigod, a demigod.
Yep.
I mean, she writes some things in there, man, that are just wow. And he's an admirer. If you know anything about what she's written, man, I mean, this woman is like a Nazi. Talks about genetics and genetic survival and the mutant, genetic recessive mutant that white people are and all this stuff. I mean, man, it's, whoa!
Mm-hmm.
And he, I'm telling you, he's an admirer of her.
Yeah.
Hers.
Yeah, but he also warned us. He said, when I return in September, my shows will be even stronger. I will focus a lot on geopolitics and the rise of China and the multipolar world and the decline of the U.S. American empire.
Oh, man, he's going to be cheerleading.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, he's going to be cheerleading that one, the end of the thing, man. But
it's funny at that point because there was a caller who called in, and it was the 111 number, so it was a Skype number, and I had no idea who it was, and I knew you were in there, so I said, hello, Sarge, you on the phone? Next thing he says, Robert, you don't greet me on your show? Where is your hospitality?
Wow, is that sensitive antenna always up the high game? But listen to this quote from Francis Cress Welsing. This is from page 23 of Keys to the Colors, the ISIS paper. Historically, white males worldwide have suffered a deep sense of male inferiority and inadequacy because they represent a mutant, genetically recessive minority population that can be genetically annihilated by all non-white people. And check this one out. This is from page 76, Symbolism of Christ, the chapter is. Once we become aware of the deep humiliation that is apparently felt by whites because of their skin, their paleness, due to the genetic mutation to albinism, and because of the genetic vulnerability when compared to non-whites, it is possible to understand the historically degraded status of sex in the white supremacy system culture. And here we go, another one. Page 104, Guns and Symbols. The gun as a symbol in the white supremacy system culture cannot be banned because it is a symbolic phallic substitute for the white male. The white male's penis and testicles genetically cannot annihilate black and other non-white males, but his gun can. Therefore, to ban the gun for the white male, castrate him symbolically, remove its defense mechanism for the ever-present threat of white genetic annihilation. Well, I guess that kind of overlooks the fact that when Greek and Roman armies used entirely muscle-powered weapons, they were ascendant over every other army they faced on the battlefield, but that's neither here nor there. Let's just forget about that. You know, okay, but whatever. Okay, but again, you know, I mean, you know, here we go. Melanin is a black pigment, this is from the symbolism of smoking object. Melanism is the black pigment which permits skin to appear other than pale. Melanin is the superior absorber of all energy. fact that the whites lack melanin may also help explain why they have quite a different concept and understanding of God, and why in the view of many non-white people think whites lack spirituality and the capacity to tune into and thereby establish harmony and justice in the universe. Because they lack the melanin sensory system, they cannot intuit that all is one. She goes on like this all over. It is an inherent genetic problem with black that explains all their pathology.
Yep.
I mean, she goes on all over the place, and he says, but she wasn't racist.
Well,
I mean, the whole book is riddled with this stuff, man. I go on and on with quotes like this in this one. And then when I read this to Warren, he said she didn't write that. I said, fool, I got the book right, man. I gave the publisher, I gave the edition number, I gave the year. I got it right in front of me. What do you mean she didn't write this?
Yep.
I mean, he's all over the place.
Yeah, I've been watching that kind of thing for years now. I remember Obama saying something, and then somebody came along and said, well, you said this. He says, no, I didn't. I said, I've got a recording of you saying this. He said, I didn't say it.
Oh, my goodness, man. I tell you, these leftists, man, look, you got to remember, Warren is symbolic of many leftists. Look, truth is nothing more than whether or not it advances their agenda. And their agenda is to replace that what is with something that shouldn't be, dominating others.
Yep.
And they do it through the lie of lying, demagoguery, and censorship. That's how they do it.
That's how they
lying,
do it.
Demagoguery, and subversion.
And then if they can't get you to go their route that way, then they start insulting. And it's like all of this stuff, the first person he started insulting was Lori Ann. Then he started insulting you. Then he started insulting me. So I was like, okay, this is cool.
And, you know, I really like to point out that when I first called in the show, the first two or three times I called in the show, he actually had reasoned discussion. I guess he thought he was going to be persuaded. And I guess he figured it out. Because oftentimes they'll do that. You know, at first they'll be relatively reasonable and civil. And you can have a discussion with them and be really on the issues. And it sounds like they're going somewhere. But that's the velvet fist and the iron glove. I mean, the iron fist and the velvet glove.
Yep.
When they realize they're going to succumb to their blandishments, then they take the glove off. And Warren revealed, when he realized that I was able to effectively counter every argument he made, or either agree with him, he's telling the truth. You know, they always mix kernels of truth in with their lies. So when he told something that was accurate as far as I understood, I agree, but I didn't argue with him on the list. Yeah, that's true, but let's look at this. You know, it'll be like, you know, and it was reasoned at first. It really was. We actually had reasoned discussions, and I thought, okay, this guy I don't agree with, we'll call in and we could compare and contrast our views and people make up. And the first couple of free calls, I actually enjoyed it. I thought it was rather stimulating in some sense. I got a guy who doesn't agree with me, and I got to vigorously defend my position. I mean, good. This makes me stronger. I like that. Well,
yep.
He realized that I was not a pushover, and then he started to get a little angry with me. Then the name calling started, and then the accusation started out of thin air. Then he started literally making up that he could not know unless I told him.
Yep.
And then I knew the jig was up.
Yeah. Well, that's what when he started going, he went after everybody who was on my show. Then he went after Vince on his show, but he wouldn't name him. he said.
I used the general category of black comfort support dog. I guess he stopped using that because I pointed out that he used the dehumanizing nature. He literally called me and eventually Vince black comfort emotional support dogs for white conservatives.
Yep.
Yeah.
But he told me, he says, you allow another person to use your CNN as a platform to promote Ron DeSantis. And this is when I got kind of confused because we hadn't even talked about him. And then he said, I heard this morning on your CNN. Well, he could have said, I heard it this morning on Black by Color Only. But no, he won't say that because because Vince puts him in his place, as do you.
Yeah, I mean, I listen to what he says, and I respond to what he says. That's the best way to put him in his place.
Yep.
I just pass up. I respond to what he says. I don't ignore him. Hey, wait a minute. Yep. Maybe he just said this. Wait a minute. You just said this. I mean, you got to get him fresh so he can't deny that he said it. You notice now he doesn't even try to respond to me telling me that authentic black Vietnam veterans fragged their options and disobeyed orders. He doesn't even mention
that. Remember when he did that on my show? And, like, Nathan was on in the chat room?
Yeah.
And, like, both Nathan and I posted what he had actually typed that he was trying to deny that he said.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Right there in the chat, you dipshit.
He did it on two or three shows, though. He did it on two or three different shows where he said this kind of thing. That, you know, that Sarge could not be an authentic black Vietnam veteran because he didn't advocate fragging his officers and mutiny.
Yep.
And that's what a real black, that, to talk about an insult to black Vietnam veterans, God, I can't think of much worse you could say.
Yeah.
Forget me. Forget me. Let's just pretend I don't even exist. What about all the black Vietnam veterans with decorations and Purple Hearts and proud of the service who served honorably and well? And this guy says the way you were authentically a black, you were willing to frag your officers and or mutiny and disobey orders.
Yeah.
Think of that.
I don't know. I usually, he'll say something to me and I'm like, well, what are you talking about? Because I'm not really watching what he's saying. So it's like, and then when he started threatening about going after my show on his show, Lori Ann said to make sure to copy all that down so I can show it to Blog Talk Radio. So I did.
And that's when, by the way, he accused me of wanting to murder him because he said, okay, well, if you feel that way, man, I hope somebody catches you, shoves an N67 frag up your ass and pulls a pin. And then he accused me of wanting to murder him, trying to coerce others in a murder.
Yep.
And he's up, I said, okay, well, go take this to the FBI, and I calmed down every damn word in the chat.
Yeah.
And I said, look, I can dream, can I? I can always hope for something, can I?
Yeah, well,
I ain't got no frag. I don't own any M67 frags to give to anybody to shove it up your ass or any Claymore mines either.
Yep.
But
well,
I can hope,
do you,
can
Sarge,
I?
Do you
I can
call
dream.
Your show or Robert? Do you ever call into a show, either one of you?
I've gone. I used to. Show.
I used to. And like I said, the first few times I called in, he was reasonable, and we had civil, reasoned discussion. But when he realized that I was not a pushover, and he was not going to be able to convince me with the strength of his arguments, that's when he took the velvet glove off of his iron fist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
well,
okay. I was just curious because I never call into a show. I don't listen to it, you know. And, he threatened to do the same thing to me to create a show called Lucid Libertarian the Liar and stuff like that. And so I downloaded. Yeah, I exported the transcript of the chat and stuff, and I'm like, okay, thinking in the back of my head, go ahead, do it. I'll report it to Blog Talk Radio Support as harassment and slander.
Mm-hmm.
Because on the show that he was calling me a liar, he refused to answer me. He was calling me a liar in the chat, and I'm like, what have I lied about? And, of course, he went on, but didn't answer it. I'm like, no, you're accusing me of being a liar. What did I lie about? And he refused to answer. And so I was like, okay, go ahead and do it. I'll report you for slander and harassment if you make a show literally with a headline that calls me a liar. And I'll bring it to Blog Talk Radio. And he never did actually do that, but I was prepared to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck if I'm going to allow him to slander me and harass me like that.
Yeah. Well, you would ask.
No way, Jose.
Yeah, you would ask if I'd ever gone to listen to his show. And no, I never have. I've seen it was there the other night, but I didn't go in.
Well, you know,
yeah, I think I went in once and just listened for like 10 or 15 minutes and hung up because it was more of the same bullshit. And I'm like, yep, not wasting my time.
Well,
got other shows to catch
me,
up on.
He forbade me to call in, so I stopped calling in. And then when he started coming in on Joe Gibson's show, and I'd be on there with him. And then Joe said, well, you invited me to the show, but I'm not coming on unless Sarge comes. And then for some reason he decided to relent, and I said, okay, I'm not going to let none of this bullshit instead go unchallenged. So I went over there then with Joe, and I went after him with the stuff there and then. But I have not called into a show since he forbade me to call into a show. He didn't want to say he wanted to see us. Okay. Well, one thing is I am a conservative. I do believe in private property. Private property rights, and if you don't want me there, you better believe I ain't going to show up. So I hadn't thrown in. But in that case, on that particular night, Joe made it a condition of him coming on there that I would either let me come on there too. And so he relented, and I came on there and gave him what for.
Yeah.
And he finally held his fire while I gave him what for. And again, I effectively refuted every single thing he said. And I didn't ignore what he said. I spoke directly to the things that he said.
Yep. And
yeah, and I know Gibson muted him several times to allow you to answer, because if he hadn't, you wouldn't have been able to allow to answer. So he kept muting him.
And then he won't answer the question when you ask him. When I answer, every time he asks me a question, I answer. It was a reasoned question. Not as, like he said one time, he asked me, when I went down to help my buddy in Texas, how many illegal aliens did you kill? I said, come on, man. I said, look, okay. Look, how many do you think I should have killed? Stupid man. That's what he does. It's demagoguery, man. It's demagogue.
Yep.
When he's losing, he does not make reason. He's instructive. He is instructive because he is typical of the Marxists. This is what they do.
This is what they do. Absolutely.
It's very instructive. It really is. You can see them in action. We got them there. And he likes to pretend like he's so enlightened and trying to present information to everybody they need to have.
Yep. Well,
man,
I'm starting to run out of time. I know we could go on through the fourth hour, but it won't even be there. So
I went into the chat room on Ron Rex show and told him, you know, that I'd be there. I'd be calling in shortly, but I just wanted to say hi in the chat room. So he knows to expect me, and I don't know, maybe Sarge and you will make your way there.
I'm going to take my little canine buddy out for a walk. My personal comfort animal, an actual one, because he's a great friend. And me and him are going to go out for a little nighttime walk, because he's looking at me like, don't you know I'm supposed to go out for a walk now? So I'm not taking for a walk. I guess I'll come by there after I get back.
Okay.
Still be on for, you know, live for another hour and 5 minutes or so to be able to call in. And it usually goes into overtime as well. He does a late night show, so.
Very good.
So, yeah. So hopefully you can make your way
there. Give everybody
my
regards when you get over there.
Oh, absolutely.
I will do so.
You guys have a great night. God bless you, and God bless America. And it's
been great talking to you guys, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Okay, I'll see you next
week. Even though
show's on Sunday nights, too.
Yeah. Even though you are mutant genetic recesses, I'll overlook that. We're gonna have to.
Yeah, I live too close to Roswell not to be.
Yeah, there you go.
No doubt.
Oh, Lord have mercy. Yeah, Lord have mercy.
That's hilarious.
Okay.
So I'll talk to you guys later, and God bless you, and I'll end the show now. I'll talk to you later.
Till then.
Okay. Well, screwed that one up.
I'm
God bless you all.